Blog Talk Radio.
We talk a lot about the kingdom here, and we talk a lot about what most churches are afraid to talk about or don't even know to talk about, which is what the first century church was really doing. But just talking about it is not enough. We encourage everybody to join us in their local neighborhoods, in their local communities, to find out more about what they can do to seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness. Gather with others who are already starting this road or starting to turn around and do things differently. Join us on thelivingnetwork.org or at hisholychurch.org. Go to the network links or go to preparingyou.com. Join the network there. It's all the same, and we'll try to hook you up with people in your local area. They will not be perfect. They don't walk on water. They are not necessarily saints, but they are talking about seeking the kingdom of God and His righteousness. And join us on Facebook, facebook.com, His Holy Church, all one word. Join us there. We'll give you updates so you can start doing some studying and thinking about these things and start looking into these things for yourselves. But it's just not enough to sit and listen or to talk about or to say. You must become a doer of the word.
Do you love the outdoors? Do you want to help make a difference for the planet? Then get involved in Collectively Rewilding. Collectively Rewilding is a movement to restore degraded ecosystems and reinvigorate sustainable traditions almost lost by working together. It's based on the idea that we can achieve more by working together than we can by working alone. Sharing the skill sets we have built over the years with each other and providing the community support we all need when there is so much work to be done in finding a sustainable future. To join our community here in Collectively Rewilding, go to www.collectivelyrewilding.com. Let's bring nature back into our lives in a community built for the wild in all of us.
Looking for something different? Looking for something fun? Join Dan every Monday on the Freedomizer Network, 9 to 10:30 Pacific, noon to 1:30 Eastern, for Common Sense with the Educated Redneck, Dan Ellison, the show about everything and nothing at all.
Would you like to take your power back by following the principles of the universal law? Earth-based spirituality such as Kantianism, shamanism, and personal alchemy? Are you sick of giving your power away to power-hungry gurus, the corrupt government, the globalists, and realize you have a higher purpose on this planet? That you are gods and goddesses that need to snap out of amnesia and reclaim your birthright? We're Darren and Dr. Joanna Wells, the Double B, founder of the Gods of Amenti, psychic intuitives, transformation coaches, training others to uncover lost knowledge and reclaim their sovereignty. Here to guide you every Sunday at 6 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and Wednesday 4:30 p.m. to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on our show, Moving Beyond the Matrix, on freedomizerradio.com. Call-in number is 319-527-6208.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever and whenever you're tuning in from, my fellow Liberty lovers. This is Amber S. from Living with Freedom Ministries, reminding you to tune in on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Central, noon Pacific time, for the Living with Freedom show, where we'll embrace what living with freedom can look like physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and in everyday life. That's 2 p.m. Central, noon Pacific, here on Freedomizer Radio.
You know what I think you should do? I think you should join us for Dynamic Word Bible Studies, where I am always hosting. My name is Felicia DeRozier, and I have two amazing co-hosts.
Cross, the favorite.
You wish. This is Mariah, the real favorite child.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm.
We spent a lot of time learning about the Bible and possibly a little time learning about humility. That would be awesome, right?
Yeah, Cross. Yeah, Mariah.
We air live every Wednesday from 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time to 10:30. Right now we're going through the book of Romans, but we're going to start moving into the Gospel of John. We're going to learn about Jesus. We're going to learn about living and walking in the Spirit and learning to be a little humble with those that we live with. It's going to be a great time. I can't wait for you to join us. Right, guys?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, we'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello, Freedomizers. I am Broccoli Man. When I am not fighting crime, I listen to the Proof Negative radio show.
I am the Wire Ritter. Not only do I forbid you to listen to Freedomizer Radio and the Proof Negative radio show, I am going to demand you wear a mask and get your naked body scan. We need to protect the one world government. You getting the real information hurts a crime syndicate. Do not listen to Proof Negative. You must now disrobe this instant so I can check your person for a constitution or cash money.
Anyway, listen to Proof Negative on Freedomizer Radio. Weeknights 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. FreedomizerRadio.com.
Now, let's get back to the Proof Negative show here on FreedomizerRadio.com. Welcome to the Proof Negative radio show, right here on FreedomizerRadio.com. Now sit back and enjoy the show.
What do you get? You get 12 victim points, and that is where the LGB land on the pyramid. But of course, I have not mentioned the T.
Oh, hey, girl. Get over here. Let's talk some shit.
That's because the T sits at the top, the very top of the pyramid. Nobody can out-victim the T.
This is the ultimate victim hierarchy pyramid. This is brilliant. Welcome back to the JP React Channel, my beautiful freedom-loving friend, where we like to call out the lies, hypocrisy, and corruption of tyrants and Satan, shine the light of awareness on woke absurdities, and highlight the amazing work of other freedom fighters. One of the freedom fighters who I absolutely love because he pursues truth, and to me, truth is synonymous with freedom, is Matt Walsh. He is stoic, and I love it. I want me a Matt Walsh beard. I've had a chance to meet Matt Walsh in person, and it was a delight. With that said, Matt Walsh has just posted a video showing the ultimate victim hierarchy pyramid based on our leftist culture today. He's not making this up. He is observing it, and he's putting it into a very powerful visual, which is hilarious. It's absurd. It's in the real world, which is why it's so darn absurd. So we're going to follow along with Matt giving us a tutorial on understanding the ultimate hierarchy victim pyramid going on today. Let's take a look.
Well, if you want to understand leftism in the modern age, and by extension our culture, you need to first understand what I call the victim hierarchy. If you understand the victim hierarchy, you understand everything. And so you need to understand how it works. So we're going to run through it today.
I'm excited. By the way, victimization, you've probably heard me say it before. Victimization has become so popular as a way of people getting their emotional needs met in a way that depletes them emotionally. People try to play the role of a victim because it feels empowering, yet they're empowering themselves via a means, being a victim, that is inherently very disempowering as they blame someone else for what they're doing to themselves.
Now, the victim hierarchy is a pyramid. You could also call it the victim pyramid, VH or VP. It's up to you.
I called it both.
At the base of the pyramid, you have white men. That's the lowest ranking.
I'm disgusted by white men. We don't get any points. Look at us. By the way, spoiler alert, you'll learn how white men can transcend to the top of the pyramid.
They cannot be victimized by anyone, and yet they victimize everyone else.
I love that. White men victimize literally everybody else.
On the pyramid, so it's a little counterintuitive. Higher you are on the pyramid, the more victimized you are, and yet the more powerful you are. Now, next you have white women, which, and they're still pretty low on the ranking, but they can at least be victimized by white men. So they have one.
I love the phraseology. They can at least be victimized by white men.
Victim points. Victim points are determined by how many other groups can victimize you. So you can tally a group's victim points simply by counting how many groups are underneath them on the pyramid. It makes it very easy to do.
And it's science.
Yes, science.
Now, flowing up from there, right above white women, we have disabled people. Now, this is a large category, and it's, in fact, getting larger by the day because what counts as a disability keeps expanding by the day.
But minor attracted people, some consider that a disability. I think those people need to be more disabled through force, if you know what I mean.
Of course, you know, there are just like the classic disabilities we all recognize, blind, deaf, wheelchair-bound, et cetera, and these are going to kind of be the anchor points for the disabled category of the victim pyramid. Now, these people are group three. And so they are automatically victimized by the two groups below them, which gives them two victim points.
Automatically victimized. That's how leftism works in our society. You're automatically victimized by people who haven't victimized you just through sheer existence. You are victimized by them. But they didn't do. Doesn't matter. You're victimized by them.
We have fat people, the obese. Sometimes obesity is counted as a disability. Sometimes it isn't. But the group is large enough, no pun intended, that it needs its own category. The plus size community has been sort of climbing the hierarchy in recent years, which has been really good exercise for them.
Now, the obese have three categories. Matt Walsh has the right amount of condescending attitude.
Or he's below them, which means that they have three victim points. Now we get to the part where the rubber meets the road. What is called our premium victim categories, PVC. Now, at this stage, every victim point is multiplied by two. There is a times two bonus for getting to this point on the victim pyramid. I'll show you how it works. The first group in the premium category are black men.
Boom!
Now, for the purpose of this demonstration, in order to keep things as simple as possible, black will include all racial minorities. Of course, in reality, there's a separate victim ranking of racial minorities that tends to change rapidly over time as different groups vie for greater victim status. For right now, we're all going to include them as under the black category, or we could just say people of color. Now, black men, therefore, have 4 victim points times the premium victim bonus, which makes 8 points.
I actually follow that. Do you follow that so far?
Obviously, next would be black women, who are victimized by black men, fat people, disabled people, white women, and white men.
Yes, that's how you get a job on The View. Do you have X amount of victim points? Okay.
All of the victimization flows up through those groups, and black women are getting all of that. And this gives them a gross of 5 victim points, but a net of 10 when you add the premium victim bonus.
G-times multiplier.
And other non-heterosexual orientations fall just above black women. They are victimized by an impressive tally of 6 other groups. And then our premium victim bonus kicks in, and what do you get? You get 12 victim points. And that is where the LGB land on the pyramid. But, of course, I have not mentioned the T.
The T! Top of the pyramid! I love it!
Oh, hey, girl. Get over here. Let's talk some shit.
That's because the T sits at the top, the very top of the pyramid. Nobody can out-victim the T. The victims who are the victims of all other victims, they stand at the pinnacle of the victim hierarchy.
By the way, you go to the top of the victim hierarchy. These are social credit score points for those who subscribe to leftism and buy into that. Therefore, do you wonder why there are such a high percentage of children calling themselves trans now compared to 20 years ago? Is that because there's more actual trans people, or is it because children aren't stupid and they have their emotional needs, so they actually know this is the top of the food pyramid? I can get more social credit points, more of a sense of belonging, more I'm specialness if I just become a T. I'm just the one asking questions. I don't have data on that, even though I have seen data on that.
It means that they are the most victimized, which means that they have the most victim points and therefore the most power. And here we introduce what is called the Apex Victim Multiplier, AVM. Whatever group sits at the top, the Apex Victim earns their 7 victim points. But then they also earn a multiple of 10, which means that trans people have not 7 or even 14 victim points, but they have 70.
Well, no one's going to top that.
Here's where things get tricky. What about the crossover in groups? A fat woman is below a black woman on the hierarchy, but what about a fat black woman? Where does she rank? How do we make sense of a gay, black, fat, deaf man in a wheelchair? Is he above black women on the pyramid, or is he still below? Can a white woman leapfrog over black men and black women if she's also a member of some of these other categories? Is there anything that a white man like myself can do to get out from the bottom of this whole heap? How do we sort through this? It seems sort of overwhelming. Well, don't worry. It's not as difficult as it seems at first. Following the intersectional victim calculus,
Intersectional victim calculus. I love these terms. They're very comedically well done. We'll get back to this work of art in a second, but first, are you wanting to burn more calories to lose weight or get ripped? Or do you want to detoxify yourself because you realize we're swimming in a sea of toxins? Or maybe you're looking to relieve stress because you too live a hectic, stressful lifestyle. Well, one of the most effective ways I've ever found to accomplish all that and more at the same time is using an infrared sauna. And the Boncharge infrared sauna blanket is my go-to. The infrared sauna blanket is super powerful, it heats up quickly, and it makes it easier than ever to get all the benefits of infrared sauna use. Personally, I do 30 to 40 minute sessions 3 times a week while I'm listening to audiobooks or podcasts. No wasted time driving to a facility, which I don't have time for in the first place, and no wasted space in your home either, thanks to Boncharge. I always feel fantastic after my sessions, and Boncharge ships worldwide in rapid time, offers easy returns and exchanges, and comes with a 12-month warranty. You too can upgrade many aspects of your health all at the same time with the Boncharge infrared sauna blanket. Get it now by going to boncharge.com/jpreacts. And while you're there, use the discount code JPREACTS to get 15% off on all products Boncharge offers. Back to the show.
All you have to do is add the total points of every group a person belongs to. So let's do the math. Let's say that a white woman, very low-ranking member of the victim hierarchy, is also disabled and fat and bisexual. Well, now she has her 1 victim point plus 2 for disabled, 3 for fat, and 12 for bisexual. Now she has 18 total victim points, which puts her comfortably above a normal non-gay, non-fat, non-disabled black man or woman. Now, there's one important note here. You cannot cash in multiple times in the disabled category.
What?
So if you are blind and also in a wheelchair, that's only 2 victim points. Those are the rules. I'm not saying I agree with them. It's just how it goes.
Forgive me, Master.
You may have noticed that because of the Apex victim multiplier, no non-trans person can get anywhere close to the trans victim point tally.
That's important to know. You want to be at the top of the food pyramid. You got to be trans, whatever else you are, but you got to be the T.
Trans will always remain the top victim, which means that...
Which, by the way, get back to what he's saying in a second. But this would explain why too many people are still standing by and letting a T, a.k.a. man, who says he's a woman, trample all over women, whether they're black women or white women, in women's sports, because they're looked at as, no, they're not victimizing the women by taking their places and at times, like, physically beating the crap out of them, which would almost make the women seem like the victim. No. The T, they are being victimized by the very women that they are competing against. Therefore, they are in the process of being oppressed by the women that they are oppressing by competing in their division. That's really... changes the game on how I see men and women's sports.
White man all the way at the bottom with his 0 victim points. Even he can easily rocket all the way to the top just by coming out as trans. A black man who has done a lot of work to become fat and gay and everything else, who has secured a position in 4 or 5 other categories, will still have to bow before the white man as the top victim if he, the white man, simply identifies as a woman. Now, let's say the black man comes out as a woman. Well, then he, once again, is going to be above the white man in the trans tier. Although trans is at the top, that category is itself subdivided depending on the race, weight, disability status, etc., of any individual trans person.
This also helps explain why you look at the Biden administration priding themselves on diversity, and they have all these diversity hires. Sam Britton, the nuclear luggage thief, Rachel Levine, Space Force Admiral, whatever. And you ask yourself, well, these diversity hires, aren't they just white men? That's the bottom of the pyramid. That is not diversity. They are not victimized by anyone. You know, we're looking for diverse victimization here. And you realize, oh, no, these white men, they're T's. Therefore, of course, we get so much social credit score added to our balance sheet for hiring these white men that say they're women.
This does get confusing, though, because the trans victim subdivisions follow the same logic as the overall victim pyramid, except that trans women who are actually male slide in above trans men who are actually female.
I like that.
The broader pyramid being female buys you points, right? But once you make it into the top echelon, the trans tier, being female makes you male, which subtracts your points. So a black woman who comes out as trans will now be below a black man who comes out as trans as the sexes have switched.
Keep in mind, he is being strictly logical here. This is all based on truth. It's like zooming into the truth of this leftist fabric that's attempting to cover society. I mean, this seems comical, and it is, because the number one comedic principle is the truth principle. So this is nothing but logic in portraying what's actually there. That's what makes it both funny while being true.
This means is that if you want to build the uber ultimate unbeatable victim, the emperor of the whole victim pyramid, you need to start with a black man. That's going to be the best canvas upon which you can paint the ultimate victim. With that building block, you can assemble a victim who is more victimized than any other victim. So if you are, therefore, a straight black man of average weight and physical capability, you may only have a few victim points, but if you dream big enough and put in the work, you could be the greatest victim of all. Remember, I didn't make these rules. I'm only here to tell you what they are. And, well, there they are.
That is brilliant. Hats off to Matt Walsh on this victim hierarchy pyramid. This really does portray how a lot of people are living their lives, seeing themselves and seeing the world around them. It is through a lens of being a victim. Wise man once told me, you can't be a victim and a master at the same time. If you want to be a master or a king or a queen of your world, You can't do that while you're also playing the role of a victim. You also can't get out of a jail you don't know you're in. That's one of the reasons why I think this video of Matt Walsh's is so brilliant, because it masterfully illustrates the jail that a lot of people put themselves in. So at least you know you're in there, and if you know you're in there, then you have a chance of getting out. But if you're in there just thinking this is empowering, but then you realize, oh no, I've built myself a jail of disempowerment by playing the role of a victim, now you have a chance to get out, but the choice is yours. I know you're probably not doing this, but we're talking about the world around us. Here we are just raising our awareness and having a good laugh at what's actually going on instead of just laying around being terrified that this is actually going on. So again, hats off to Matt Walsh. If you don't follow him, I think he's one of my favorite follows on the internet. He's a brilliant dude doing God's work, telling the truth like nobody else is, wearing a beard like nobody else wears it. With that said, my freedom-loving friend, let me know what you thought of this victim hierarchy pyramid in the comments below. If you have anything to add to it, make sure to insert that in the comments. And I appreciate you watching. I'll look forward to seeing you on our next video.
Did the CIA have a hand in the murder of John F. Kennedy, an American president? And here's the reply we received verbatim. Quote, "The answer is yes. I believe they were involved. It's a whole different country from what we thought it was. It's all fake. Americans have trusted their government less with every passing year since the killing of John F. Kennedy."
What's up, guys? Boy, Benny. So I have it on very good authority that Tucker Carlson was fired from his slot at Fox News. And a reminder that Tucker Carlson is the most watched man in news history. He had the highest consistent viewership in that time slot of any anchor in the modern era. So Tucker Carlson's firing was because of something, and it wasn't because of money. Fox News was making boatloads of it. Tucker Carlson was the premier golden calf, okay, for a dying news business, right, which is the cable news business. And so you don't just fire somebody like that. Why did Tucker Carlson get fired? I have it on very good authority that it was a specific report that Tucker Carlson talked about on the Joe Rogan podcast. So you have the most listened to man on earth, Joe Rogan, with the other most listened to man on earth, Tucker Carlson, talking together. This is the deep state nightmare. And Tucker Carlson broke some news about a report that we believe actually truly got Tucker Carlson fired. And I have that on very good authority. I have it on one of the highest authorities when it comes to this topic. This, ladies and gentlemen, is a small part of that report. When Tucker Carlson spoke with a CIA agent saying that, yes, the CIA has, in fact, a hand in the killing of JFK, effectively the destruction of democracy itself. The CIA was directly involved in it as a non-elected state actor to destroy our nation and kill a president. Listen to this.
We decided to find out. We spoke to someone who had access to these still hidden CIA documents, a person who was deeply familiar with what they contain. We asked this person directly, did the CIA have a hand in the murder of John F. Kennedy, an American president? And here's the reply we received verbatim. Quote, "The answer is yes. I believe they were involved. It's a whole different country from what we thought it was. It's all fake." It's hard to imagine a more jarring response than that. Again, this is not a, quote, conspiracy theorist that we spoke to. Not even close. This is someone with direct knowledge of the information that once again is being withheld from the American public. And the answer we received was unequivocal. Yes, the CIA was involved in the assassination of the president.
Tucker Carlson went on Joe Rogan's podcast and confirmed not only that this reporting was factual, but that the CIA operators contacted him to threaten him after this report. Now, this is breaking news. Apparently, it was Mike Pompeo's lawyers. Mike Pompeo was the director of the CIA under Trump, convinced Trump to do a lot of dumb things like not release the JFK files, UFOs, things like that. Check it out.
You hear Trump's take on the JFK assassination, why he didn't release the files?
Yeah, I know what Trump's take is.
He said that if you knew what I know, you wouldn't tell people either, which is crazy.
Well,
what does that mean?
That's his position on the UAP thing as well.
Yeah.
Actually. And that's a lot of people's position on it. I mean,
you know, Trump is saying, of course, the CIA had knowledge of it. That is known. I mean, the whole thing, it's like, it's so funny. There's so many levels and there's so much I don't understand. But the whole JFK conspiracy industry, and it really is an industry, more books written on that than almost any historical topic, is filled with wackos, right? There are a lot of wackos in there. But it obscures – that fact obscures the larger fact, which is the facts themselves tell an unbelievable story.
Yeah.
And so whatever, I could get into it at great length. But, yeah, they're still classifying documents 61 years later. Both Trump and Joe Biden have, in violation of my read of federal law, kept those documents secret. There's no living person connected to the Kennedy assassination. It was – a couple generations ago. There's no one person whose secrets are being protected. It's an institution, or maybe countries. There may have been countries involved too. I mean, I don't know the answer, but there's clearly something worth protecting. And I know that when I spoke to someone who'd seen the documents, okay, 2 years ago, and I got one fact out of him, which is, yes, the CIA was involved. And by CIA is a huge organization, but James Jesus Angleton, the head of the operations directorate, had knowledge of this, which I think is well known. But that's the view of someone who saw the documents. So I thought that was news, so I went on TV and said that. The next day, I'll never forget it, I went quail hunting. And I was driving back, and I got a phone call from Mike Pompeo's lawyer. Mike Pompeo was the Secretary of State, but before then, he was the director of the CIA. And in that position, he plotted the murder of Julian Assange. So he is a criminal as far as I'm concerned. But his lawyer called me and said, you know, you should know that anyone who tells you the contents of classified documents has committed a crime. He's threatening me. He's in my car. With my dog sitting next to me, I'll never forget this. And I said, are you really saying that to reveal that the U.S. government had a role in the murder of a democratically elected president, to say that out loud, that's the crime? What about the actual crime, which is murdering a president? Like, you're covering up for that, Mike Pompeo.
What did he say to that?
He had no response at all.
Tucker Carlson was doing that reporting in a series of reports of how the intel agencies have meddled in American democracy. And Tucker Carlson was talking about, obviously, how Richard Nixon was undone. Richard Nixon was undone, the most popular president in American history, via the military and the intelligence agencies and the FBI, because he kept asking questions about Kennedy's assassination. Nixon wasn't convinced. And the setup was really remarkable. Richard Nixon, a very smart person, didn't see it coming. Tucker Carlson details how just for asking questions about the JFK assassination, they were able to take out Nixon. In a political assassination, not a physical assassination, but nonetheless neutralized.
When do you think that switched?
Well, I think it's been the case for a long time. I mean, if you look at what happened to Richard Nixon, which I, of course, did not understand at all, Richard Nixon was taken out by the FBI and CIA, and with the help of Bob Woodward, who was a Washington Post reporter, who had been a naval intelligence officer working in the White House, working in the Nixon White House. And then he shows up, like, a year later, and he's this brand-new reporter. He'd never been a journalist at all. He's a naval intel officer, the famous Bob Woodward we all revere, and he's at the Washington Post, and somehow he gets the biggest story in the history of the Washington Post. He's the lead guy in that story. Well, I worked at a newspaper. I've been in the news business my whole life. That is not how it works. You don't take a kid like his first day from a totally unrelated business and put him on the biggest story. But he was. He was that guy. And who is his main source for Watergate? Oh, the number two guy at the FBI. Oh, so you have the naval intelligence officer working with the FBI official to destroy the president. Okay, so that's a deep state coup. What else? How would you describe that? If that happened in Guatemala, what would you say? And yet the way it was framed and the way that I accepted for decades was, oh, this intrepid reporter fought power. No, no, no. This intrepid reporter, Bob Woodward, was a tool of power, secret power, which is the most threatening kind, to bounce the single most popular president in American history, Richard Nixon, from office before the end of his term, and replace him with who?
Oh, Gerald Ford, who sat on the Warren Commission. Now, how did Gerald Ford get to be Richard Nixon's vice president? Well, because Carl Albert, the Democrat Speaker of the House, told him, you must choose him. We will only confirm him when they sent the actual elected vice president away for tax evasion, Spiro Agnew of Maryland. So you have a complete setup, like an absolute – Gerald Ford, the only unelected president in American history, actually sat on the Warren Commission. Something else that I accepted at face value until I looked at it, and I was like, that's completely insane. You didn't want to interview Jack Ruby in your investigation of the assassination? Okay, you're fake. Yeah, he was on the Warren Commission. And so sorry for the long story, but the point is, like, that happened in front of all of us, but the way it was framed cloaked the obvious reality of it. The people who broke into the Watergate office building, from which the name is taken, Watergate, I think it was six of them or seven of them, all but one was a CIA employee. That's real. It's like, look it up on Google. So the whole thing, Richard Nixon was elected by more votes than any president in American history in the 1972 election. He was the most popular by votes, which is the only way we can really measure popularity, the most popular president in his reelection campaign. And 2 years later, he's gone. Undone by a naval intel officer, the number two guy at the FBI, and a bunch of CIA employees. You tell me what that is. Those are the facts. Those are not disputed facts. That's not crackpot shit. That's just look it up.
So why does nobody ever ask questions about this kind of stuff? Tucker Carlson's final sort of coup de grace here is that they have too much compromising information on all these members of Congress. It might not come as a shock to you, but it's still a shocking to hear Tucker Carlson say it, because Tucker Carlson obviously worked closely with members of Congress. His kid works in Congress, so he knows everyone, right? Tucker says the reason why nobody ever questions the CIA is because they know what will happen to them if they do. Watch.
No, I mean, people don't say that because they're worried about getting punished. They're worried about someone putting kiddie porn on their computer.
Right.
Members of Congress are terrified of the intel agencies. I'm not guessing at that. They've told me that, including people on the Intel Committee, including people who run the Intel Committee, the people whose job it is to oversee and keep in line these enormous secretive agencies whose budgets we can't even know. They're black budgets. They're the parents. The agencies are the children. They're afraid of the agencies. That's not compatible with democracy. Democracy is a really simple system, even representative democracy like ours. The people rule. They do so through elections. They express their preference through voting. They send their people to the capital city to run the government on their behalf. Whenever you have unelected people who are not accountable to anyone making the biggest decisions, you don't have a democracy. You have something else, another system. I would call it a tyranny or whatever you want to call it. It's not a democracy. So that's like super obvious. It's playing out in front of everyone, and no one cares, and no one does anything about it. And I think the reason is because they're threatened. And if you look at the committee chairmen who allow this to happen year after year, they're all – and I don't know – people say, oh, they're compromised or being blackmailed or whatever. I don't have evidence of that, but I know them, and they all have things to hide. I know that for a fact. And so it's not a stretch of imagination to imagine that, you know, some committee chairman who's allowing warrantless spying on Americans to continue or whatever abuse they're allowing – knowing fully or hiding the truth about UAPs, ignoring the UAP Disclosure Act of 2023, like, why are they doing that? It's not impossible to imagine that some guy with a drinking problem or a weird sex life, and that's very common up there, that's why they're doing it, because they don't want to be exposed. I don't have evidence of that. I don't have proof of that.
Right.
But that's not a crazy thing to assume that could be happening. And I said to somebody, a very powerful person, the other day in a conversation in my kitchen, an elected official holds a really senior position, a very famous person. I was going crazy. I was so mad about all this stuff and about the warrantless spying and about the funding for these insane wars. And I said to the guy who serves in one of the legislative bodies, I got so mad my dogs were afraid. They're like, whoa, why are you yelling? Because I don't yell at home. But I was like, all these people are controlled. They're all, you know, got weird sex lives and all these things are hiding and they're being blackmailed by the intel agencies. And he said, and I'm quoting, I know. I was like, okay, so at this point we're just sort of admitting that's real? Like, why do we allow that to continue?
So here, ladies and gentlemen, you have a bona fide situation that sort of undergirds why nothing ever gets better in this country and why things will only ever get worse. Because we don't live actually in a democracy. We live inside of a totalitarian oligarchy, dictatorial state. And nothing is real. And the forces that actually control all of us are not elected by us. So there is no democracy here. It's all fake. It's been fake for a long time. And, well, until those powers are put in check by we the people, because that's where power actually comes from, then we will continue to carry on without actually living in a democracy. There's a lot of people talking about democracy. This isn't democracy, right? Having unelected bureaucrats that can remove presidents by, you know, violent means, that's not democracy. Shut up anybody.
Joe Brandon, I agree. Yeah.
What's up, guys? Boy, Benny. Donald Trump has famously said, I only hire the best people, and while we may disagree on some of those hires, Mike Pence, we certainly would agree with Alina Haba. Alina Haba is Donald Trump's attorney. She wears FJB necklaces and has MAGA drip and swag at the UFC events. Alina Haba hanging out with Kid Rock, getting photobombed by Kid Rock, rocking the FJB necklace. Look at this. Look at this. Look at her. Look at her. Look at that. The MAGA swag, the MAGA drip, and the FJB necklace on point for Alina Haba, a dear friend of the show, ladies and gentlemen. Alina Haba might have been wearing the FJB necklace. We can't exactly see, but we do know that that's what she was thinking. She was definitely thinking and saying FJB overtly in front of the court today. Trump lawyer Alina Haba rips into fraud case as a complete waste of time and taxpayer money as judge makes bombshell ruling, $175 million bond. Donald Trump had a good day in court today, won a number of things, but Alina Haba was hot coming out of this courtroom. No cameras in the courtroom. Ladies and gentlemen, they would have melted on this one. Here we go.
He should not have two teams of lawyers here today. He should not even be here today because he did nothing wrong. It is the epitome of a witch hunt. I just left where a judge asked us whether our cash bonds, cash, sitting in. Ms. James wanted to argue and say that our cash somehow isn't green enough. We wasted time. The judge made a comment saying he thought that money market accounts would go down under the amount. He doesn't even understand basic principles of finance. But this was the man that decided that we owed money and my client committed fraud. We are going to pack every single one. 1 hour, the attorney general and that judge realized quickly that they had no idea what they were talking about. We came to an agreement that everything would be the same. We would modify terms, and that was it. This is where your taxpayer dollars are going, America. Right here. Witch hunt after witch hunt. President Trump's company was worth more in that case than it is now. And now what? We're here because of something that happened when he was in the White House that wasn't even wrong. It was not wrong. You hire lawyers to solve problems. Lawyers solve those problems. You pay them. That's it. This is a joke. It's an affront to the American Constitution. It's an affront to our judicial system. And it's an affront to every lawyer that cares about their life, that cares about what is right and wrong. I am sick of coming in front of the press and saying this, but you have to because you people need to understand what is going on. God forbid you put an accounting thing in for legal counsel. It's legal counsel. And now our taxpayer dollars, my time, our attorney's fees, are all here because they're afraid of 2024. And you know what? They should be because the American people are not stupid. They see what's going on. Thank you.
Boom. Alina Haba doing her thing. Alina Haba has been such a great defender of Donald Trump, such a strong voice, obviously. She's been on our show a lot. We just did an interview with her. We'll play that actually in just a second. Trump attorney and spokesperson Alina Haba goes off on lawfare waged against Trump. This is where your taxpayer dollars are going, America, right here. The witch hunt after witch hunt after witch hunt. People are getting so upset about this, and obviously Alina Haba is one of those people. She regularly finds herself outside of these courthouses having to defend Donald Trump against insane attacks and lawfare.
You have a right to hire a lawyer who can stand up and say something when they see something wrong. But I was told to sit down today. I was yelled at, and I've had a judge who is unhinged slamming a table. Let me be very clear. I don't tolerate that in my life. I'm not going to tolerate it here. And you know what? You shouldn't either.
Alina Haba from day one on the steps of the court. Better than any courtroom drama, and her press conferences have been things of legend.
We are now over a month deep into the biggest waste of New York taxpayer dollars I've ever seen. President Trump's statement of financial condition was so undervalued, but Letitia James, as you've seen, will show up when it's a press day. I said it yesterday on the news, but you know when she's going to come? When the main event's here, and that is Trump. She piggybacked on Trump to get into office. She didn't do it well enough to be a governor. She was a failed gubernatorial candidate. And now she's working on her politics again. She shows up, sits in the back when she should be doing real work because the city of New York has fallen apart. If you are a business in New York, pay attention. You put your value. If President Trump wanted to inflate his net worth on a statement of financial condition, his brand alone could double, triple it. It's basic. It's basic. This is a waste of time. We heard testimony from an expert this week. Ms. James wasn't here for that day because it wasn't good for her. He's been paid by New York taxpayer dollars $450,000 in the past few months to come here and testify. That's your money. That's not my money. It is a crime, and now these children are being brought in away from their families for doing nothing wrong. It's a great company. It has always been a great company. It's worth a lot more than the statements say, and she just doesn't like it. And now her politics don't allow her to back off or back down, and it's unfortunate. But this case should be done. We are wasting our time. Thank you.
Alina Haba, obviously a fan favorite. We love having her on our program. She does take to Fox News and did so last night in order to comment on Donald Trump's legal attacks in the state of New York. Get the hell out of New York. Get out of blue states and blue cities. We say this regularly on the program. Alina Haba being forced to go back to New York into the studios of Fox News and defend Donald Trump.
So I think there's reality, and then there's this world that they all live in, and they put on quite a performance trying to make it look like there was corruption that doesn't exist. And we got up and we made it very clear. First, let's start with something very basic. We are not supposed to be here doing this trial right now because we're not even sure what the scope is because the appellate division hasn't said so. Now we're sitting here in court, we're putting on our arguments, and we're saying, wait a minute, you're relying on Michael Cohen. They played a clip from him today. I started laughing.
A clip of Michael Cohen at the court case today.
That was how they thought their strong point was. Let's start off
with Michael James,
Cohen.
The Democrat Attorney General, led with Michael Cohen in court.
Yes.
That should tell you everything you need to know. This judge looked a little creepy with the smile. What was your opinion of him?
I am not going to state it. I'm going to let you do it.
Very good. I'll state it. He looked very deranged. So the vibe inside was what? The president was there. He didn't have to show up, but he did. Why did he show up?
Because this is his company. This is his life. And people forget that President Trump, I hope they don't forget. You shouldn't. You can't. President Trump was a very important person before he was president. He was a successful businessman, which is why he was a great president. He built this company from scratch, and now they're attacking his business, the people that work for this business, and his children. It's uncanny, and he's not going to stand for it because this is political lawfare. This isn't the justice system. This is political 100%. He needed to be there. He needed to look him in the eye.
Does he beat this whole rap?
He should. And if he doesn't beat it in this court, I'll tell you right now, we'll beat it somewhere else. This is the most ridiculous case I've ever seen.
So, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, a very good spokesperson for Donald Trump. Big fans of Alina Haba. Obviously, we know that she's somebody who speaks on behalf of the president and does so with great verb and obviously with great passion, and she has done so outside of the courthouses, inside of the courthouses, and all around. Somebody who is not on Donald Trump's staff but who sounds like it is actually the Fox News expert Jonathan Turley on Fox News, saying in this case you're taking a misdemeanor, reviving it because it was dead, suggesting a crime that does not exist, and then hitting Trump with dozens of counts. Most citizens see this for what it is, the weaponization of the criminal justice system. Jonathan Turley finally, taking the gloves off here and saying exactly what everybody knows these trials are.
In this case, you're taking this misdemeanor, reviving it because it was dead, suggesting a crime that doesn't exist, and then hitting Trump with dozens of counts. Most citizens, at least outside New York, see that for what it is. It's the weaponization of the criminal justice system.
So, yeah, I mean, listen, if you have everybody on the legal side, the sane legal side of these arguments saying the same thing, then what's your defense with Donald Trump? We'll see. We'll see what the jury decides. Again, we have very little hope. The jury are made up of radical, psychotic, left-wing liberals, and this entire trial is obviously designed to try and get Donald Trump a conviction. It's amazing how it's rest on this one, because none of the other trials are really moving forward. They're trying to convict Donald Trump, keep him off the campaign trail, bankrupt him, maybe put him in prison. Remarkable. Alina Haba doing a great job defending Donald Trump. She did so on our program recently, and obviously not great times, dark days, but silver lining, having people who are able to really, truly defend you. Here's Alina Haba. Donald Trump has said on Truth Social he'd be happy to run for president from prison, and he thinks it'd make him Nelson Mandela. Yeah. And I wonder what your thoughts are on that.
He's told me that. Yeah, he's told me that. He said it's like Nelson Mandela. You know, he's not wrong. The one time he said it to me actually was I was in court, and I remember him saying the same thing. And, you know, he says that, and he means it. I think he is the victim of political prosecution, and selective prosecution is what we call it legally. And, you know, that's when you target somebody because you don't like what they stand for, or you target them because they're your opponent in some regard or a threat to you. And that is what is happening. How can you say it's not? The fact that this particular case was not brought, Benny, and then he decides to run and they bring it. There's a book of a prosecutor who worked in a firm that works with the Clintons and the DNC. There is a book by that prosecutor who has left his law firm to go work for the DA just to bring this case. And when they wouldn't bring the case, when Cy Vance would not bring this case against President Trump, he quit in outrage, wrote a book, and said how angry he was because he wanted them to bring this case, but Michael Cohen was discredited. So then what happens? Brad comes in, President Trump says I'm running for office, and they bring the case, and they indict, and rush a trial for this month before November. I've had cases sitting in New York for 3 years that have not had motions heard. 3 years.
Wow.
No motions heard. But these cases somehow get fast-tracked. It's crazy.
Every bit of it. Sing. Deep in the meadow, under the well.
What's up, guys? Boy, Benny. Remember Dr. Frankenstein, the scientist who reanimated a corpse and then that monster went and terrorized the town when he lost control of it? You know that that happens in politics all the time, that various political parties create movements, and then they lose control of those movements, and then they terrorize everybody, metaphorically and actually literally right now. This brings us along nicely to the squad. Remember the squad? Yeah, made up of AOC and, so you got a bartender. Nobody knows who this is. Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib. Okay? These people are monsters. Okay? I'll prove it, and I can prove it. They're monsters, and they've always been monsters. We don't need to see the end of the story here to understand that the squad are insane, crazy people who are totally psychotic and will really lower your opinion of the kind of people that are allowed in Congress. I would like to bring to your attention footage of a member of the squad, Rashida Tlaib, in 2016, where she was protesting Donald Trump. Donald Trump told her to get a job, and that led to Rashida Tlaib doing this.
You guys are crazy!
You're an animal! Get a job!
Members of Congress, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so in case you're wondering exactly the kind of timber that Congress produces, and the Democrat Party inside of Congress, watch screaming, raving, mad Rashida Tlaib. And remember, that person's voting on American budgets, okay? Yeah. That brings us along nicely to other squad member, family member, Ilhan Omar. Apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Ilhan Omar's daughter apparently is now homeless. Well, because of this behavior. Because it's psychotic, antisocial, damaging, threatening, illegal protest behavior. Oh, yeah, that's right. She's homeless and starving after being suspended from college over anti-Israel protests at Columbia University, which saw her zip-tied for 7 hours. That's right. So this girl's name is Isra Hirsi, and Isra Hirsi is 21 years old. She's the daughter of squad member Ilhan Omar, and she was part of a days-long protest in support of Palestine. She and her Bernard College classmates were suspended from campus. It's a little bit frantic, like, where am I going to sleep, she says. Oh, no. Isra Hirsi, the daughter of left-wing Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, says she has nowhere to eat or live after being suspended for participating in anti-Israel protests at Columbia University, an illegal protest. Days-long protest at the Ivy League campus in support of Palestine has drawn heavy condemnation from both sides of the political spectrum, including the White House. She and her Barnyard College classmates, the college is a sister school with Columbia, are among the more than 100 protesters that have been arrested, according to the NYPD. Oh, okay, so here's photos of her arrest. Got it. She is a privileged first-generation immigrant to this country. Her and her family come from war-torn Somalia, where there's a raging civil war that Ilhan Omar's family were directly involved in and would have potentially, I mean, presumably led to, like, great threat upon them, right? When these civil wars spin out of control, you never know what's going to happen. So if anybody should be grateful and praising of America and the wonderful opportunity to go to Ivy League schools on what I assume is a full-ride scholarship, it should be Hirsi right here. But she is not grateful. She is actually a repugnant, vile person who hates this country, as ever, and is utterly ungrateful and entitled and feels like she can threaten cops and other students. Ilhan Omar's daughter, Isra Hirsi, complains that her anti-Israel protest group is 100% targeted by the university administration. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, it's always the rich kids of powerful people who are the victims.
Student groups have this kind of target on their back, or do you feel that you are being targeted because of the fact that it is in solidarity with Palestinians and against what Israel is doing to Palestinians?
Oh, this is 100% targeted. Every single protest that we have, there's a group of counter-protesters that bring all of their items, their flags and things like that, and they're not seen as having unsanctioned protests or really receive the kind of disciplinary warnings that many of our fellow organizers receive just for being seen at these protests. And so there is definitely some hypocrisy here, especially you can kind of see it with the students that were sprayed us with the chemical weapons and the fact that there is no public information as to what happened to them, but rather the university is actively discussing what is happening to the students here and making it a whole public spectacle rather than when we haven't done anything to physically harm students, whereas those that sprayed those chemical weapons physically harmed.
So she's bragging that they haven't yet physically harmed any students. Okay, so a real quick fact check on this protest. One, it is illegal. Columbia University has been taken over by this protest, and they're claiming that Columbia University doesn't exist anymore. Ilhan Omar's daughter is part of a mob of students torn down the American flag on campus and cheer as it hits the floor. Ashley St. Clair saying, this is nothing more than a Marxist revolution, outright war on the West. She's right. They are now forcing Jewish students to leave campus. Remember, we haven't done any physical harm. Yeah, class at Columbia is totally virtual today because they cannot guarantee the safety of Jewish students. President of Columbia needs to resign. The campus is now under complete control of a radical terrorist group sympathizers that say that there's no such thing as Columbia University. It's called the People's University now. The tent city is growing and have effectively taken over the campus. Also, interestingly here, outside of Colombia this week, I took footage of a pro-Hamas crowd chanting in Arabic. Translated for you, effectively, they just want to destroy Israel. It's going to come as no shock to you. They're chanting for direct violence in Arabic, so English-speaking Americans won't notice. Oh, yeah. The New York Post saying, Ivy, leave. Columbia rabbi warns Jewish students to stay home amid extreme anti-Semitism. So now Jewish people can't safely go to school. Got it? But remember, ladies and gentlemen, she's the victim. Remember, the daughter of the congresswoman, she's the victim. Ilhan Omar's daughter says she's homeless and starving after threatening the Jewish students on her campus. Why hasn't Ilhan Omar reached out? She paid her husband's political consulting firm only $2.8 million. That seems like a really excellent form of money laundering. They're all in the same, it's all the same bag, man. It's all the same thing. Fannie Willis, this is the con. You go and you take untold millions from the taxpayer, you shovel it into your husband's consulting firm, and then you get to live off that cash. Rep. Ilhan Omar has funneled nearly $2.8 million into her husband's political consulting firm since 2019. Omar's campaign paid $1.6 million to E Street Group LLC, which is owned by her husband, Tim Minette, from the start of 2019. Oh, yeah. Uh-oh. According to the FBC data. Well, well, well. Why hasn't she just spent any of that money on her daughter? Apparently, Ilhan Omar's estimated net worth was negative $45,000 when she got elected. So maybe that's why we're not exactly sure. So Israa Hirsi is a person who has in her bio, angry black girl and a literal Marxist. You see the hammer and sickle, literal Marxist symbol. Apparently, she goes to Columbia University, and she is now staging an illegal protest on that university, and she's been locked out and arrested. I'm an organizer with the Apartheid Divest. My 3 years at Barnard College, I've never been reprimanded or received any disciplinary warnings. Probably should have. I just received notice that I'm one of three students suspended for standing in solidarity with Palestine. Those of us in Gaza solidarity encampment will not be intimidated. We will stand resolute until our demands are met. Oh, interesting. Sounds like somebody is effing around and may find out our demands include divestment from companies complicit in genocide, transparency of Colombia's investments, full amnesty for all students facing repression. Ilhan Omar is, of course, not shockingly very, very proud of her daughter. She's encouraged her compassion for organizing a statewide school. Okay. So, really important moment in American history. How are others responding? Well, the cops are now mass arresting people. Okay, that's good. You'll never guess which one of these is on an FBI terrorist watch list. That's exactly right. You literally have intifada terrorist sympathizers walking our streets and threatening our police officers. And it's the little granny waving the American 25-cent American flag. That'll be locked up. Osama bin Laden given honorary posthumous doctorate from Columbia. yes. Babylon Bee doesn't miss. I hope and pray that the millionaires and billionaires who donate to Columbia University will divest from ever giving them a single penny again. That's happening. Patriots owner Robert Kraft pulls support from Columbia after anti-Israel protests. No longer an institution I recognize. Good for you. Good for you. New England Patriots team owner Robert Kraft announced on Monday that he was pulling support from Columbia University, ongoing Israel protests on Manhattan campus. It was through the full academic scholarship at Columbia that gave me the ability to attend college and start my life, and I've been tremendously grateful, Kraft said in a statement. However, the school I love so much and the one that welcomed me and provided me with so much opportunity is no longer an institution I recognized. F around and find out. In case you're wondering if this is just Ivy League institutions that are getting it, nope. These same mongoloids came up and protested Lizzo and Stephen Colbert and Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, and Joe Biden when they were all in New York. This is what the protests looked like. Much, much rowdier than inside. Much higher esprit de corps than inside of the group. Massive anti-Biden protesters outside. They've always been protesting Joe Biden. They literally call for his arrest in the streets. Free Palestine! Free Palestine!
Yeah, okay. That's the Free Palestine protest being chanted at a Genocide Joe. They later would go on to chant about how they were going to imprison Genocide Joe. They did the same thing to Kamala Harris, in case you're wondering if intersectional feminists get a free pass here.
Thank you. We work with you. We talk with you. We organize with you. We pray with you. We do so much work together. And just in this holiday season, which should be a joyful time of year,
Frankenstein's monster. Frankenstein's monster. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I have shown you this Babylon Bee hilarious headline. Osama bin Laden given an honorary posthumous degree from Columbia. But I haven't shown you, well, a really funny SNL clip that legitimately predicted exactly what's going on here. Predicted everything that's happening right now. A father dropping off his daughter at college in 2015. And I don't think I've ever really said this because SNL hasn't been good in a very long time. But man, SNL nailed it with this one.
Well, this is it. You need any help with your bag?
No, that's all right. I got it.
How about some walking around money?
Dad, it's okay.
Okay, just make sure to...
Call you when I get there? I know.
Yeah. You know, you could stay home, do another year of high school.
Very funny, Dad.
Well, I'll see you Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I'll see you. Hey, Dad.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You got it, kiddo. Looks like your ride's here.
You be careful, okay?
Dad, it's just ISIS.
Hey guys, welcome to the Liberal Hive Mind, a channel solely focused on exposing the abundant hypocrisy of the left. Let me ask you, do you believe in coincidences within the world of politics, or do you think there's always an explanation or a connection? For the most part, my view is that in the world of politics, there are very, very few coincidences. I think sometimes they happen, but I think for the most part, there's always a link, always a reason, or an ulterior motive. And now this, well, the timing seems very, very odd. Why is it that it always seems as though the Biden administration is engaging in lawfare intimidation tactics? Remember when New York City's Eric Adams criticized the federal government, criticized Joe Biden directly on the issue of border security and illegal migration?
We had to do a real job of explaining to everyday New Yorkers that the federal government has abandoned this important issue that's a national issue. So they're angry, and it's going to come out. I'm the mayor. Mm-hmm.
You know? And then, of course, out of nowhere, what was it, a couple days later, a couple weeks later, Eric Adams and many of his staff members were under investigation.
In a growing federal investigation into New York City Mayor Eric Adams, FBI agents are sifting through his text messages, according to the New York Times.
Let me ask you, was that a coincidence, or do you think there was some sort of a connection there? Do you think that investigation was retaliatory? Well, I don't know. I'm not going to say anything definitively, but what I will say is it was certainly odd timing. Well, once again, we have some very, very
Odd timing, as the Biden administration is now suing a retail chain for racial discrimination a couple days after Joe Biden was frankly humiliated in that exact same retail chain. You guys aren't going to believe this. Let me show you guys exactly what's going on. We got some stuff to get into, so let's roll the tape. All right, folks, so let's first start off with the backstory. Joe Biden recently was in Pennsylvania doing a little campaign stop in the state, and this came one day after Donald Trump's triumphant viral campaign moment in Harlem. Trump looked like an absolute hero, a beloved hero, in the middle of Harlem at the Jose Aldo bodega. Well, the Biden campaign said, well, if he could do it, we might as well one-up him. We might as well copy. And so Joe Biden took an impromptu stop at a Sheetz gas station, trying to mimic the same energy. But of course, as we know with Piss Pants Joe, he doesn't command a room in the same way. He doesn't have the same sort of charisma and star power. And so, of course, it was a complete disaster. No enthusiasm at all, a complete dud of a campaign stop, nobody enthused or excited to see him, no genuine interaction with the people, and of course it's mainly because, you know, these interactions aren't authentic. Joe Biden's impromptu gas station visits are totally rehearsed, controlled, and staged, and we saw proof of that during his visit to Wawa in Philadelphia. This happened on the same day.
Hello, sir. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you doing, man?
But you all, you like each other, right? I think that's very nice. Have a good time. Nice to see everybody.
How you doing, Trump?
I'm doing good.
I love you, man. I'm good. How are you?
Everybody having a good time.
Everything down to his interaction with the cashier and the tip is completely staged political kabuki theater, but despite this, he's still a walking dud.
This is for you, sir. All right, and this is a tip for you. I know it's all been paid.
Thank you so much. We have milkshakes, we have refreshers.
Black and white.
A black and white milkshake? We could perfectly make that for you, sir. So if you actually like to, right over there where it says order here, you can order it to your specification again. That includes whipped cream and other toppings as well.
All right.
All right. Thank
you. Perfect.
Thank
you're
you
welcome.
So much.
It's been a pleasure.
Mr. President, I'm going to pick up a few pounds here.
And don't forget, we also included drinks for you as well. Just enjoy.
Come
a complete disaster. But anyways, going back to his lukewarm reception at Sheetz, it was an embarrassing moment for him. Nobody was excited to see him. And then a couple days later, I guess no coincidence at all. I mean, I'm not going to say anything happened for sure, but very oddly enough, a couple days later, his government is now suing Sheetz gas stations for supposed racial discrimination. Take a look at this.
Sheetz is being sued over its hiring practices. The U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission filed the suit this morning. It claims that the way Sheetz bases employment on criminal records disproportionately screens out Black, Native American, and other multiracial applicants, and that this violates federal law. The suit does not accuse Sheetz of being motivated by race when making hiring decisions. We have reached out to Sheetz for comment, but so far we have not heard back.
The question is this more Democrat Biden lawfare? I don't know, but it is certainly odd. And of course, as per usual, it's more woke Democrat garbage. Apparently, refusing to hire convicted felons is now racial discrimination. And why is that? Well, because their policy disproportionately affects Black applicants. You know, this just seems like an excuse. Maybe something happened behind the scenes where Sheetz wasn't exactly cooperative. They didn't want to coordinate with the Biden team in the same way that Wawa did, playing this little Democrat theater game, attempting to prop up Joe as a man of the people in order to compete with Donald Trump. Maybe they didn't play the game, the political theater game, and this is the reaction. This seems like a completely bogus lawsuit. I'm pretty sure most companies aren't exactly thrilled to hire convicted felons. Well, you can make the claim against any company that that's racial discrimination. And what a load of crap that is. This complete left-wing idiocy continues where race is weaponized. My assumption is that's exactly what the Biden administration is doing, weaponizing race to once again fight on the behalf of criminals and, of course, with a little side of engaging in lawfare campaigns against their enemies. You know, in this world, everybody's a racist, and these left-wingers, once again, show how they're willing to twist and manipulate the facts, not only destroy their opponents, but continue to paint criminals as the victim. I'm so tired of all of it. You know, whether or not this lawsuit against Sheetz is an act of retribution doesn't matter. It's still completely idiotic, and it's the same thing, the same pattern of behavior that we see from these left-wing leaders. This pattern of behavior.
Mr. Speaker, Walgreens is planning to close yet another pharmacy in the Massachusetts 7th, this time on Warren Street in Roxbury, a community that is 85% black and Latino. This closure is a part of a larger trend of abandoning low-income communities like the previous closures in Mattapan and Hyde Park, both in the Massachusetts 7th. When a Walgreens leaves a neighborhood, they disrupt the entire community and they take with them baby formula, diapers, asthma inhalers, life-saving medications, and of course, jobs. These closures are not arbitrary and they are not innocent. They are life-threatening acts of racial and economic discrimination.
Yep, in mostly inner-city minority communities, you have stores being ransacked and robbed, putting huge corporate losses up on the board for major companies that are simply trying to provide services in these neighborhoods. They've dealt with it for like the better part of a decade. At one point, it's no longer sustainable, so they close the store or pull out of the district. And again, it's discriminatory business practices. Come on, give me a frickin' break. I am just so tired of this left-wing lunacy. Anyways, that's pretty much what I got for you guys on this one. Hopefully you enjoyed the video. If you did, make sure to leave a like and possibly subscribe. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you on the next one.
You want more? I'll give you more. Speaking of that JLulu jail time, we've got another Diddy blind item. So this is in 2013, and this was released on PR Newswire. I used to also have to do investor relations, and I used to release, write the press releases to give and send them to PR Newswire. It's funny. Sean Diddy Combs and Ciroc Ultra Premium Vodka team up with...
So much bigger than you could ever imagine. It's the whole system.
What's up, guys? Boy, Benny. What is it that the authoritarian fears the most? It don't care if you're a king or a dictator or a Marxist leader or communist leader. It is always the same thing. You fear the truth. Because the truth about your crimes against humanity, the truth about who you are, the truth about your own personal moral failings, your own weakness, your own brutality, these truths get known, and then people rise up against you. This is why, of course, free information is blocked in all totalitarian systems. It's why whistleblowers, or people that speak the truth, go missing inside of systems like Soviet Russia or modern-day communist China. Vladimir Lenin, the founding father of Soviet Russia, had this to say. It is true that liberty is precious, so precious that it must be carefully rationed, meaning nobody must be at liberty to question us or to know the truth. It is sort of with that table setting that we wish to talk about this very interesting little story that crossed our feed here seconds ago. Kylie Marissa Roth, controversial TikToker, dead at 36. So who is Kylie Marissa Roth? Well, I don't actually know, to be quite honest with you. I'm not on TikTok. I don't really know TikTok celebrities. It's not a platform that I particularly invest in for a lot of different reasons, but this was a TikToker that had a big following. That had 221,000 followers, 5 million likes, and apparently had millions more followers, but TikTok banned their account. Why? Kylie Marissa Roth, a TikToker known for controversial celebrity blind items, who started many of her videos with the famous catchphrase, "You want more, I'll give you more," has died at 36. It's a little strange for somebody who seems to be in decent health, right? 36 years old, I mean, you're certainly not supposed to die at that age.
Kylie's sister, Lindsay, announced on Monday on Instagram, claiming the content creator died last week. We don't know what happened yet. A little strange for the sister to be saying. I know she touched many people with her humor, intelligence, beauty, gossip, activism, athleticism, and more. She had many gifts. If anybody is connected to Kylie, I'm here to talk and share memories. So, like, her family's completely in the dark as to how her sister died. Her mom also in the dark as to how she died. Jackie Cohen-Roth also reacted to the news on LinkedIn, writing, my daughter has passed away, but saying that they really don't have any idea how she died. Kylie loved and lived fiercely. Nothing makes sense now, and we will understand more in the next few days. People are asking questions about this, obviously. I mean, it's a tragedy, but people are asking questions about this because, again, the nature of her work was to expose celebrities and celebrity culture. Kylie's last TikTok, in which she talks about the irony of a cringe Tom Sandoval and JoJo Siwa both appearing at the Fox Special Forces, was posted last week. Currently has over 2 million views. Again, I'm not a big-time celebrity culture guy. You won't find – I despise Hollywood and celebrity culture. But there are some people who super get into it, right? And this TikToker was one of them. Here's the post from her sister here. Got 9,000 likes talking about how her sister passed away, and they don't know what happened. They're not sure what the hell happened. If you go through her account, what you can see, the deceased account, is you can see her with millions of views actually talking about, well, some pretty big-name people, right? Noah Cyrus, The Rock, Timothy Chalamet, Kylie Jenner. I don't even know how to say his name right. That shows you exactly how tied into celebrity culture I am. Selena Gomez, Jay-Z, and so on and so on. Sacha Baron Cohen. And so what a lot of this, you know, what a lot of what she talks about is effectively, you know, sort of exposing what is going on right now. Like here with Diddy is a good example, right? Talking about Diddy and what's actually happening behind the scenes. An example of her work and talking about Diddy, like right here.
You want more? I'll give you more. Speaking of that JLulu jail time, we've got another Diddy blind item. So this is in 2013, and this was released on PR Newswire. I used to also have to do investor relations, and I used to release, like write the press releases to give and send them to PR Newswire. It's funny. Sean Diddy Combs and Ciroc Ultra Premium Vodka team up with Uber for the holidays to provide 1 million worth of safe rides home. Ciroc will host additional pledge parties throughout the month of December in key markets, including New York, Los Angeles, Miami, Atlanta, Washington, D.C., and Chicago. This sounds like a great idea. So Diddy hosts parties all over the country, but specifically those markets where, I don't know, Diddy's parties, he likes to ply women full of stuff, and then, oops, they need rides home. This sounds like the makings of nothing good. Now, in hindsight, people are looking at the producer wannabe rapper and his charity that he ran about a decade ago. Basically, it involved giving drunk women, especially celebrities, a ride home. The more drunk, the better. Our producer slash wannabe rapper would sometimes personally take them home. Diddy's not an Uber driver, but he would personally take these people from his pledge parties home. How much do you guys want to bet that they didn't make it home? Allegedly, there's still 4 or 5 of them still trapped in Diddy's basement in his Miami home.
And so, yeah, I mean, obviously she covers a lot of ground here and is somebody who is exposing or at the very least, like, is very tied in to celebrity culture. And we know that because it's really interesting. Movie stars like Julia Fox, star of Uncut Gems, saying, I know I never met Kylie in real life, but I felt like I knew her. So devastated, have been crying ever since the news leaked on TikTok. I will miss her deeply. Bunny XO, country music star Jelly Roll's wife, commented on Kylie's last TikTok, I am so sad. There are other TikTokers that are following up. So like celebrities and celebrity culture, like I obviously know her and talk to her and watch her. Did she cross too many powerful people, right, is the question that many are asking right now. So Kylie Marissa Roth, famous TikToker, has been found dead with no cause of death given. She recently uploaded videos exposing Oprah and Diddy. The family is unsure about what caused her death. Last week, leading up to her passing, she was having issues with her account with over 700,000 followers being banned. So again, a lot of people are saying, like, what's going on here? Very, very, very odd. And a lot of those people are asking, did this have something to do with the exposing of Diddy? She has a lot, based on our review of her channel, she has a lot of focus on the Diddy story, and for good reason. I mean, obviously, right? Like, for good reason. There are cameras, hidden cameras found all over Diddy's house. Like, when the feds raided the house, you know, the house looked like this on the inside, and they ripped up everything looking for electronics. You can see the footage of the feds carrying out electronics, computers, hard drives from the house. Surely Diddy recorded somebody who he shouldn't have in his freakout parties, right? And got either a politician or somebody famous, somebody who could like call in a federal raid like this. And that's what happened to this guy. Look at this. Look at the servers, the safes cracked open and the electronics strewn about. That's what the feds were after here. So what are, you know, what are people who knew Diddy saying about all this? Various rappers are saying, yeah, we knew what you were doing. You had a hard drive with all of these tapes on them, and you were trying to hide them, right? Check it out.
But he needed to build a spot over there in Bali for his boy Puffy. Puffy need. I warned KPD to take his ass over there. There's no extradition laws over there. So I'm warning you now, Puffy. Take your ass over there. Reggie prediction. I know Puffy is smart enough, and he probably done already cleaned his houses. But sexual predators, what do they do? What do, and we'd be like, damn, why? They treat their sex tapes like, yeah, remember that song, Me and My Girlfriend, that Pac did? You know, what he was talking about? What was Pac talking about, y'all? And that? Do y'all really know what he was talking about? For those of y'all know what he's talking about, he was talking about a gun, but sexual predators is what hold on to their tapes. And cops know that. So I wouldn't be surprised if some store just or some of Puffy properties be getting raided real soon.
Well, isn't that interesting? Because lo and behold, just a few short weeks ago, we saw the government agents raiding Puffy's properties and seizing tapes, hard drives, computers, laptops, and various data centers from them, along with, of course, arresting his direct family members, or at the very least placing them under arrest by putting them in handcuffs and bringing them out of the house like this. So does this have anything to do with the death of this TikToker who has been exposing sort of this cover up here, right? You can see like in video after video after video, this expose about Diddy and what's actually happening. And some of these videos getting millions and millions of views. Did you get a little too close to the truth here? We're not exactly certain, but we do know what Jesse Waters was able to uncover about Diddy and about his freakout parties and what they were really about. This is why they're calling him the Jeffrey Epstein of the music industry. Have a listen.
Now, Diddy called these his freakout parties. In attendance were celebrities, politicians, athletes, international dignitaries like British royalty, Prince Harry, and music label executives. Lil Rod claimed some of the biggest names in the recording industry sponsored these parties with sex workers, drugs, and underage girls. The CEO of Universal Music, Lucian Grange, is named as a defendant. So is the former CEO of Motown Records, Ethiopia, Habert Mariam, and others. Lil Rod says hidden cameras were in every room of Diddy's homes. Lil Rod believes that Mr. Combs possesses compromising footage of every person that has attended his freak-off parties and his house parties. Salacious tapes of Hollywood's biggest names, including record CEOs and politicians, doing drugs and cavorting with prostitutes and minors. The complaint argues that these freak-off parties were a business model. Young and up-and-coming talent attended and were promised career opportunities and access to music executives. They were then plied with drugs and alcohol, filmed. Some were blackmailed. There was a quid pro quo, according to the complaint. Lil Rod said not only were these music executives sponsoring these parties, they were handing Diddy large sums of cash that he used to pay for the sex workers and drugs.
Something tells me the IRS is going to be interested.
News, your tax dollars are not only funding a variety of global wars, they're also funding the censorship and smearing of anti-war voices. And it's all included in one package. Actually, it isn't. You're charged separately for the whole thing. Hello there, you awakening wonders. Thanks for joining us on this voyage to truth and freedom. Click the link in the description, become a member of our community. You get an additional video every single week talking about topics that would be heavily censored on YouTube, probably heavily censored anywhere, as a matter of fact, because censorship is immersive and sprawling. And do you know that deep state agencies have found a way to censor and shut down anti-war voices, even in Ukraine? So there are Ukrainian media outlets making content to smear anti-war voices like this one, this voice now that's talking right now, this voice, my voice, as well as Max Blumenthal and Jimmy Dore and a variety of other people that are saying, well, should we have a diplomatic peaceful solution? The deep state are funding the smearing of those voices, almost as if there's a concerted effort to ensure that war is continually perpetuated and anyone opposing war is one way or another brought down, shut down and smeared. And thanks to some great journalism, we can see the paper trail right from your pocket and your hard work into silencing anti-war voices. Let's show you how this works. First of all, Max Blumenthal posted this tweet. The State and National Endowment for Democracy, a CIA cutout, are funding shady NGOs in Kiev to smear American critics of the disastrous Ukraine proxy war. U.S. government-sponsored Vox Ukraine has a series of videos attacking me, Jimmy Dore, Wyatt Reed 13, at Rusty Rockets, and more. Of course, you know which one I'm going to focus on primarily. Here is a piece of content created by that deep state-funded outlet attacking me.
Russell Brand is a British actor, publicist, and broadcaster who began his career as a comedian. Brand leads an outrageous lifestyle and is constantly placed in all sorts of scandals. YouTube has already stripped his channel of ad revenue for violating its creator liability policy.
By the way, we got that translated. To be fair to the host, she was saying it in Ukrainian. So that even Ukrainian people stopped liking me. What's the value of that?
Now the channel has 6.5 million subscribers, is devoid of monetization. By the way, it became especially popular during the COVID-19 pandemic, when Brand began to spread conspiracy theories about the coronavirus.
Conspiracy theories like maybe lockdowns haven't been correctly researched, maybe the vaccines don't stop transmission, maybe Pfizer and Moderna take too much money, maybe there's a revolving door between Big Pharma and the regulatory bodies that are meant to prevent them from exploiting the population. There was a whole host of conspiracy theories that were peddled during that period. But let's focus now not on the corruption of the pharmaceutical industry. I feel that you've been convinced of that. Let's look at the military-industrial complex and how they work in conjunction with the deep state to take your tax dollars to shut down anti-war voices. This is by the excellent journalist Li Fang. You should follow him on Substack. Ukraine's American-backed fight against Russia is taking place not only in the blood-soaked trenches of the Donbass region, but also on what military planners call the cognitive battlefield to win hearts and minds. I don't like the phrase cognitive battlefield. That means your consciousness is their territory. A sprawling constellation of media outlets organized with substantial funding and direction from the US government has not just sought to counter Russian propaganda, but has supported strong censorship laws and shutdowns of dissident outlets, disseminated disinformation of its own, and sought to silence critics of the war, including many American citizens. Economist Jeffrey Sachs, commentator Tucker Carlson, journalist Glenn Greenwald, and University of Chicago professor John Mearsheimer are among the critics of both the left and the right who have been cast as part of a network of Russian propaganda. But the figures targeted by the Ukrainian watchdog groups are hardly Kremlin agents. They simply have forcefully criticized dominant narratives around the war. Sachs is a highly respected international development expert who has angered Ukrainian officials over his repeated calls for a diplomatic solution to the current military conflict. Last November, he gave a speech at the United Nations calling for a negotiated peace. Mearsheimer has written extensively on international relations and is a skeptic of NATO expansion. He predicted that Western efforts to militarize Ukraine would lead to a Russian invasion. Greenwald is a Pulitzer Prize-winning independent journalist who has criticized not just war coverage but media dynamics that suppress voices that run counter to US narratives. What they they mean when they demand censorship of pro-Russian propaganda is anything that questions the US-EU role in the Ukraine war or who dissents from their narratives, Greenwald has observed. There is no evidence of Kremlin influence over their viewpoints, but their comments alone are enough for a network of US-backed Ukrainian media groups to tarnish these experts as Russian propagandists. So, legitimate journalists like Glenn Greenwald and academics like Mearsheimer and Sachs are being tarnished as pro-Putin. I've met that Jeffrey Sachs, I know Glenn Greenwald pretty well, and they're not people that particularly, it seems to me, to have much skin in the game when it comes to geopolitical conflicts. They're, in the case of Jeffrey Sachs, just an academic who said, well, actually, no, the history of Ukraine's quite complicated. There was a coup in 2014, and like Mearsheimer, I don't know him, but I like his content and his academic work, and he seems to be simply trying to relay facts in a rather dispassionate manner. And Glenn Greenwald is a brilliant journalist who I care about as a human being, but also, I don't imagine he's someone who would just, like, for a laugh, take a bunch of money from Putin or victimize Ukraine for no good reason. These are all very credible professionals who I strongly suspect don't have powerful pro-Putin or pro-Russian views, are simply interested in telling the truth. Note, too, that these agencies and their backers are censoring voices on both the left and right. So if you're on either the left or right, remember, those distinctions don't matter anymore, and we have to recognize that peripheral anti-establishment voices have to unify, put aside their differences, if we're ever going to address this increasingly centralized and authoritarian power. US taxpayer dollars are flowing to outlets such as the New Voice of Ukraine, Vox Ukraine, Detector Media, the Institute of Mass Information, the Public Broadcasting Company of Ukraine, and many others. Some of this money has come from the $44.1 billion in civilian needs foreign aid committed to Ukraine. While the funding is officially billed as an ambitious program to develop high-quality independent news programs, counter malign Russian influence, and modernize Ukraine's archaic media laws, the news sites, in many cases, have promoted aggressive messages that stray from traditional journalistic practices to promote the Ukrainian government's official positions and delegitimize its critics. We can't bring you this earth-shattering, paradigm-changing content without the support of our partners and without clear heads. That's why I'm happy to tell you that AirTech are the only published, peer-reviewed, patented EMF protection solution. That means electromagnetic field, you know that. Trusted by experts, neuroscientists, doctors, biohackers, and pro-fighting athlete cage fighters, its effectiveness has been proven in real time using EEG brain scan demonstrations. Remove the fear and unknown levels of daily exposure and have peace of mind with AirTech LifeTune Protection. Over 20 years invested in research and development, AirTech technology creates synergy between you and your devices by modulating and transforming chaotic frequencies to match our own biological energy. Unlock better wellness. Go to AirTech.com and use the code Russell30 for 30% off your entire purchase. Have one of these in your area. And remember, if you're an awakened wonder, you can see in our 5G video exactly why this stuff is so important. So take advantage of this offer. Click the link in the description. Let's get back to the content, baby. Unlike similar media development programs that the International Agency for International Development, USAID, had led throughout the Middle East, Ukrainian outlets tend to produce a great deal of English content that trickles back into the domestic American audience and explicitly targets American foreign policy discourse. The New Voice of Ukraine syndicates with Yahoo News. Vox Ukraine is a fact-checking partner with Meta, which assists in removing content deemed Russian disinformation from Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp. Detector Media has similarly led a consortium of non-profit groups pressuring social media platforms to aggressively remove content critical of Ukraine. That's very interesting. So, it's not just happening in Ukraine, although that video that we showed you a moment ago is in Ukrainian and therefore presumably for a Ukrainian audience. Elsewhere, New Voices of Ukraine is being syndicated with Yahoo News, which is significant. Vox Ukraine is a fact-checking partner with Meta, and they assist in removing content deemed Russian disinformation. Now, of course, if you are Ukrainian and you're living in Ukraine, your opinion on Russia might be somewhat biased. But what are the interests of these CIA carve-outs in promoting particular views and participating in the censorship, not only, it seems, of Ukrainian voices and improving Ukrainian independent media and archaic Ukrainian laws, but shutting down dissent from within your country and from within my country? Don't we have the right to express anti-war, pro-peace and diplomacy views? Again, I can't speak for those other brilliant academics and professionals, but for my myself. I'm not anti-Ukraine and pro-Russian. I'm pro not spending tax dollars in perpetuating unwinnable wars, and I'm largely pro-peace and think that as a species we should have evolved beyond the point where we're teetering on the brink of a nuclear war because people won't sit down nicely and come to some mutually amenable agreement. Congress is now weighing a new supplemental funding measure with approximately $60 billion earmarked for the war in Ukraine. A small portion of the emergency spending package is devoted to continued USAID programs in the country. Information control is a central dynamic playing out in the Ukraine-Russia war. US media have provided wide coverage of President Vladimir Putin's efforts to clamp down on critical news outlets, enacting new criminal penalties for those publishing false information about the conflict. But far less attention has been paid to the Ukraine government's crackdown on independent and opposition media, a push aided by the US-backed network of anti-disinformation groups. Even as Washington's efforts to censor information at home is drawing greater scrutiny, its support of Ukraine's efforts reflects the increasingly global reach of the American government's propaganda arms. I wouldn't imagine that things like this were happening, would you? That the CIA had carve-outs that were funding groups in Ukraine that were censoring American voices. It's quite convoluted for something that ultimately you're funding. There's an information war going on between Russia and Ukraine, and the United States is not a disinterested party. We're an active participant, said George Beebe, a director with the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. The US government has been trying to shape perceptions, and it's very difficult to separate what's intended for foreign audiences from what seeps into the Anglosphere media, if you want to call it that, including here in the United States. American influence in Ukraine's media environment stretches back to the end of the Cold War, though it has intensified in recent years. Since the outbreak of the war, USAID, or USAID, support has extended to 175 national Ukrainian media entities. Over the last decade, efforts to crack down on speech have been increasingly justified as an effort to protect social media from disinformation. The US helped set up new think tanks and media watchdogs and brought over communications specialists to guide Ukraine's approach. Nina Jankovic, the polarizing official whom President Biden appointed to lead the Department of Homeland Security's Disinformation Governance Board to police social media content, previously advised the Ukrainian Foreign Ministry on its anti-disinformation work. It increasingly seems, doesn't it, that the categories of disinformation and misinformation were deliberately invented so that you could now have departments to tend to disinformation and misinformation, and so that there could be budgets for those departments, and so that those budgets could seep into media organizations that had a remit that includes censorship, shutting down dissenting voices, smearing opposing voices, and cleaning up social media platforms. It amounts to censorship and smearing, propaganda and control, but it's so bureaucratically entangled and framed in the language of, hey, we're here to help, in the same way as the war is supposed to be humanitarian rather than some sort of colonial or for-profit endeavor. The censorship project is always seen as somehow necessary to protect us and our apparent inability to determine good from bad unless someone pre-chews our information and parcels it up nicely for us, as is clearly happening here. When Nina Jankovic and that government disinformation board were set up, I feel like there was a lot of pushback and a lot of people felt like, this isn't legit, this disinformation board. They set them up in our country as well. The BBC run them, and there's all sorts of various attempts to pretend that there are groups that are there to protect us and ensure that we only get information that's good for us. I remember that many people thought, this is not legitimate. This is not reliable. It was a bit of a PR disaster, and they had to change its name and repackage it and reposition it. Isn't it extraordinary to see Nina Jankovic literally outsourced to other nations to carry on the project as if it was a tremendous success? Can you get any closer to neo-colonialism and imperialism than that? We created this here in America. It's worked so well. It didn't work at all. We're going to outsource it so you can have your own disinformation and malinformation boards. That's how it looks now. Remember when we often talk about how dictatorships now won't be militaristic, but bureaucratic, technological, anodyne, and astringent. Well, it's the same here with the methodology. It doesn't look like tanks rolling into town. It's like Nina Jankovic coming into town saying, we're going to help you with your misinformation and malinformation. But nevertheless, these are methods and means of control. And again, you're funding them. It's an American project. In response to questions about the US-backed anti-disinformation groups in Ukraine targeting Americans, the US State Department provided a statement saying it defines disinformation as false or misleading information that is deliberately created or spread with the intent to deceive or mislead, while noting that the US provides funding to credible, independent media organizations to strengthen democracies in the countries we work in around the world. The statement declared, we do not control the editorial content of these organizations. We're just kind of helping these guys, giving them a little leg up. Here, there's Nina Jankovic. Get that down your neck. However, disclosures indicate that the US government and its contractors tasked with reforming Ukraine's institutions have directly set the agenda for Ukrainian outlets. It's, again, eerily similar to the rhetoric around the provision of weaponry or ongoing events in the Middle East. It's none of our business. Israel can just do, I don't know what they're doing. What happened exactly? And the same in Ukraine. We're not at war with Russia. Everything's sort of been done. They're just at a keyboard, just innocently. Oh, is that explosion? Oh, it's a genocide over there. Here, you might want to say this about Glenn Greenwald. It's none of their business. It's really odd and opaque and mysterious and frightening. Immediately after Russia invaded Ukraine 2 years ago, the USAID dispensed emergency grants to its media partners, partly through Zinc Network, a contractor based in London that's been accused of setting up covert public relations campaigns on behalf of the British government. I wonder what kind of covert public relations campaigns. The grant description notes the money went to the Zinc Network and Detector Media to assist the Ukrainian government with strategic communications and to undermine Kremlin information operations. Last September, journalist Jack Paulson reported on a leaked report from the Zinc Network's Open Information Partnership, which helps coordinate the activities of several anti-Russian disinformation non-profits around Europe backed by NATO members, including Detector Media. The lengthy report defines disinformation as not only false or misleading content, but also verifiable information which is unbalanced or skewed, amplifies or exaggerates certain elements for effect, or uses emotive or inflammatory language to achieve effects which fit within existing Kremlin narratives, aims, or activities. I sense they get a bit closer to me when I see terms like emotive and inflammatory language. But what I will tell you is I'm not trying to fit within existing Kremlin narratives, because I don't actually know what existing Kremlin narratives are, although I'll take a wild guess that they prefer that Russia's agenda were pursued globally and in regional conflicts, but that sometimes converges with my general belief that we should be pursuing peace and not funding unwinnable wars that could lead to nuclear Armageddon. I don't know if that's part of the Kremlin's deal or not. We'll look into it. In other words, factual information with emotional language that simply overlaps with anything remotely connected to Russian viewpoints is considered disinformation, according to this US-backed consulting firm helping to guide the efforts of Ukrainian think tanks and media. I think that's sort of quite telling, actually. It's like they want to keep us in a sort of a flat bureaucratic anodyne environment, because think how that could be applied to a variety of subjects if this was allowed to continue. You know, some of these organizations, like Logically AI, are working in your country in the lead up to the presidential election. So if you've like got strong feelings and you use emotive language online on social media sites, that's disinformation. That was some emotional language. Hey, I don't like the way my country's being controlled by bureaucrats who just seem to want forever wars. That was a bit emotional. Well, I am emotional about wars. Sorry, you are... You can't censor people for being emotional and telling the truth. That's censoring a type of person and a type of trait. It's not about facts. It's about how you express those facts. So if you're like just a good communicator, they're going to shut you down. They'll get you one way or other. But everything I said was true. Yeah, but you actually, there's some quite good jokes in there. So I'm afraid we're going to have to kill you. Where's this going? Many of the broad narratives the report identified as Russian disinformation follow this vague rubric. These included allegations that NATO is using Ukraine as a pawn in a proxy war against Russia and concerns that Ukrainian politicians are corrupt. Allegations that NATO is using Ukraine as a pawn in a proxy war. Do you not think that's like a possibility? Is that not something that you would consider when they're involved in the 2014 coup, when there are CIA bases all over Ukraine, and that Russia is a long-standing enemy in a war for global supremacy? It seems perfectly reasonable. Ukrainian politicians are corrupt. That is also a matter of record. Right, now we're getting there. If you say actual facts that they don't like or they don't want you to hear, they'll shut you down. So it starts off all very nice, isn't it? This misinformation could mislead people and lead them to make medical choices that are bad for them and their family. And that's it. That's the category of misinformation. Also, though, if you say stuff that's true, but it doesn't work for Pfizer or Raytheon or Lockheed Martin or the CIA, that's also misinformation. Also, though, we like NATO. I mean, what's left? This is what's left. Thank you. Yes, please. No, thank you. Okay, I'll go to work, have my taxes. But in the end, compliance. That's what's left for you. Compliance. Ukraine's government has also worked with US government officials and others to censor its American critics. One prominent example is Aaron Mattei, an independent journalist who has criticized US policy regarding Ukraine in other outlets. It's nice, it's just like reading all my mates. It's like your business at school. Hey, I know him! Following the Russian invasion, Twitter, under its old ownership, flagged Mattei to be censored after the Security Service of Ukraine, SBU, and the Ukrainian intelligence agency included him on a list of accounts sent to the FBI that were suspected by the SBU in spreading fear and disinformation. Fear? I'm afraid you spread fear then. Wait a minute. This is actually an abstract concept. Sir, You just spread ennui and disappointment. A journalist writing a critique on U.S. involvement in a foreign war has had his name sent to the FBI. Doesn't that concern you a little bit if you consider America's history and involvement in foreign wars? Like, I don't know, Vietnam, Iraq, and all foreign wars ever, except perhaps the ones against actual Nazis. You would have questions, wouldn't you? That shouldn't be, sir. Someone somewhere has got an opinion on American involvement in foreign war. Well, get that all the way to Hoover.
Mr. Vice President, someone finally bought a copy of your book, sir.
But that's something that should just be accepted in a democracy. And the fact that it isn't shows you where we are going. Just to have an opinion, just to write an article, just to oppose the powerful is becoming contraband. And while they're doing it, they're telling you that they're helping you. That's what makes it all the more terrifying for me. When we talk about dictatorships, sometimes maybe it sounds hyperbolic. Don't be ridiculous. You're free to do as you choose. There's a McDonald's over there. You could buy yourself some candy bars. But when a journalist writing about American involvement in foreign wars is flagged and his details are sent to the FBI, that is not freedom. That's not liberty. That's how you move towards dictatorship. What's happening, it seems to me, is that we are increasingly moving in the direction of centralized power and being told that to question that process is in itself hysterical, hyperbolic, conspiratorial, but it's evident. It's happening. Like, if you think about it, Aaron Mattei, I don't know if you know much about Aaron Mattei, but he's like an intelligent journalist. Like, that don't seem right. You know, he's not like a lunatic. He's not like, oh, Russia. That's not the vibe he's on at all. You might, if you Googled Aaron Mattei, what'll come up is conspiracy theories or nut job or gray zone. But this is what's being created here. What we're seeing is the machinery that discredits dissent and legitimizes, and more than legitimizes, normalizes almost invisibly the shutting down of dissent and the crushing of critics through supporting independent media. Do you think for a minute that a CIA carve-out is like doing some philanthropic work? Because you know what worries me? It's Ukrainian independent media. Those underdogs can't get a break. Well, let's get over there and support those guys. Give them some dollars. Send Nina Yankovic. Nina! But it's about control. It's not about anything else, is it? Suddenly it gives you a different context for what happens to a figure like Alex Jones, who's controversial and rhetorically quite evangelical. Oh, well, it's Alex Jones. He's crazy. He said all those crazy things about Sandy Hook. He should be annihilated. Well, now we know the CIA were involved in that and were guiding that.
Does the Bureau practice entrapment a lot?
Yeah, we get really close.
Not officially?
No. We get as close as we can.
Now we know that the CIA are not only interested in zealous, evangelical, fanciful figures that are full of flair. It's like now it's Glenn Greenwald is a problem, and Aaron Mattei, and Jeremy Sachs, and Mearsheimer, like these sort of quite staid academics. Alex Jones is crazy. Oh, yeah, he seems a bit crazy. Puffy cheeks and that stuff he said about frogs.
I don't like him putting chemicals in the water that turn the friggin' frogs gay.
Yeah, crazy. And plus, Glenn Greenwald. Oh, what? Like, was married to a man. Didn't he, like, adopt a lot of dogs? And didn't he win a Pulitzer Prize? Yeah, he's crazy. And Aaron Mattei, what? Gabor Mate's son, who's like the journalist. Yeah, he's crazy as well. So, obviously, things like the Alex Jones takedown, or maybe Joe Rogan, Ivermectin, CNN, or maybe old Russ, these things are like sort of vivid, glaring, ugh, colourful entertainment-style characters that are a bit crazy. And then it's like credible journalists, academics, and you start thinking, well, what's the common thread here then? Is it that these are sort of dangerous figures that are a risk to their audience? Or is it that there's just some information that you are not allowed? You are the problem in the end. What I've worked out is if you have the kind of information that Aaron Mattei or Glenn Greenwald or Jeffrey Sachs are conveying and spreading and populating, or in the more entertainment-skewed aspect of this people like me are talking about, then you're going to go, well, I'm not paying those tax dollars anymore. I'm not participating in this. And increasingly, that's what you're getting. You're people that are, you're getting a situation where people serving in the American military are not pro-foreign wars. I mean, once you get to that point, it's actually quite tentative. So this has to become increasingly insidious and immersive to prevent its own demise. Just months after the social media request, Ross Burley, a former Zinc Network and Open Information Partnership official now with the Center for Information Resilience, spoke openly about his desire to censor critics of the war, including Mattei. Burley argued that social media platforms needed more responsibility regarding what types of content to allow. Even I saw Russell Brand, who has a huge following on YouTube, was interviewing a journalist called Aaron Mattei on his channel, said Burley, who added that it is incredibly irresponsible for YouTube and other social media companies to continue to host these people. Well, by some eerie coincidence, YouTube, as you saw in that Ukrainian video, don't know who funds that, demonetized me quite recently. What a coincidence.
The organisations supported by the US government have also sought to silence critics inside Ukraine. Before the war, in one of President Zelensky's first controversial acts to stifle political opposition, he moved in February 2021 to close multiple television channels over allegations of Kremlin ties. Oh wow, so maybe those ties were not legitimate either. In May 2022, the Zelensky government widely expanded his efforts to outlaw the political opposition. Zelensky moved to ban 11 political parties over alleged ties to Russia. So ties to Russia is like a sort of weapon. Ties to Russia, ties to Russia, ties to Russia. The function of it is to eliminate dissenting voices. I feel like I have to continually remind you, like, I know Ukrainian people. I don't want Ukrainian people to die. I just think that probably the Ukrainian government and the Russian government and the American government and the British government are all corrupt and we'd be better off without them. Later that summer, other bills to crack down on media rights that failed to pass in the past over civil liberty concerns were brought back into consideration. Among the on media law's most contentious provisions is the power granting a council controlled by Zelensky and his allies to ban media outlets without a court order. Now, they are a nation at war, and again, I would suggest you have a look at what Jeffrey Sachs says about how that war began and how they found themselves in that position and why there wasn't a peace treaty signed when one was available. And during times of war, censorship, I suppose, and centralized control is common, and perhaps it could be argued under some circumstances necessary. But if you remember, what we read and receive everywhere is that we are supporting this war. What is one of the words you hear? For freedom, for democracy. And whatever shutting down political opponents and media outlets is not democracy. It's not democracy when Ukraine do it. It's not democracy when CIA carve-outs do it. It's not democracy when they do it to brilliant journalists or academics or online YouTubers. It's not democracy. Free speech is a principle for a reason. And you can see now that the creation of the category of misinformation and the normalization of censorship is part of a play to generate further power and tools to control the potential opposition to that power. Ukraine's National Union of Journalists described the bill as the biggest threat to free speech in independent Ukraine's history. They're also Ukrainian. That's some other Ukrainian people. Support Ukraine. Which Ukraine? The Ukraine that believes in free speech or the Ukraine that facilitates massive weapon sales? In the midst of the first months of the Russian invasion, many in Ukraine readily accepted the need for emergency government influence. The Ukrainian government condensed the major television channels into a single United News national broadcast that continues today. That's so sort of brazen, isn't it? Dun, dun, dun! United News. What does that mean? This is the only news you're getting. Many journalists voluntarily paused critical reporting of the Ukrainian government to focus on coverage of the Russian invasion. Now, over 2 years into the conflict, reporters are facing new difficulties in reporting on routine issues. Journalists taking a critical look at the government are facing intimidation and threats. Expressing viewpoints that run counter to Ukraine and NATO policies with respect to the war is enough to make an individual an enemy of the state. And of course, you'll be aware and perhaps in your mind repeating the name of Gonzalo Lira, the American journalist who died in Ukraine after saying he probably would die in Ukraine, whose name is seldom mentioned among other journalists imprisoned in foreign lands for writing the truth about the wars and conflicts they're reporting on. So it seems to me that what we have here, thanks to Li Fang's reporting, is another piece in the puzzle that demonstrates how media, the deep state, and powerful corporations work together to create an environment in which only their ideas are allowed to be communicated. It's only because it's so brazen when it's pieced together that you begin to feel irked and outraged by it, because generally, this is normalized. The category of misinformation and disinformation and malinformation that you've heard here described as people speaking emotionally and passionately, telling the truth, is now a problem worthy of censorship. Academics, journalists, prize-winning journalists, online YouTubers, all shut down for the same reason. Not because what they're saying is untrue, but because what they're saying runs counter to the intentions of the powerful. So next time you see someone smeared, attacked, shut down, you have a series of questions in front of you to ask. What is the reason this person or this information is being cancelled, destroyed, or eliminated? Is it in order to protect me, or is it because they are a part in a chain, however small or insignificant, that could lead to dissent, objection, resistance, revolution, and therefore prevent what seems increasingly like a global scheme for total control from reaching its terrifying climax? But that's just what I think. Why don't you let me know what you think in the comments and chat? Click the link in the description, join our movement, get additional content, and help us to oppose this incredible madness that's fully immersive, it seems, at this point. More important than that, if you can, stay free.
Hey, thanks for watching. If you want to see more uncensored content where free speech can flourish,
the WHO's leading vaccine expert admitted in court that vaccine passports
passports were a scam because the vaccines were never intended to stop transmission. And with vaccine companies around the world still recording record profits and avoiding taxation, we ask you, is the legacy of the pandemic era only just beginning? And what more will be revealed? Hello there, you Awakening Wonders. Thanks for joining us on this voyage to truth and freedom. We need you to become a member of our movement by clicking the link in the description. You'll get access to additional content, content that we cannot share on platforms such as this because it's too conflagratory. You know us. We'll take it right to the very limit. We'll find ways to weave webs of truth before your very eyes that we may be unveiled, that the scales may fall, that we may awaken together, live in harmony forever. But to do that, we're going to have to understand what's been going on for the last few years. In particular, the ever-evolving and devolving story of the pandemic period. Now we know, as the WHO still lobby for a global treaty that will give them unique powers to impose legislation and regulation and control, that their own vaccine expert admitted that vaccine passports were always a scam. So just bear in mind for a moment, those people that said, hold on a minute, is this like a form of social credit score? Is this just like a social control measure? And they went, no, this is a measure to protect people. We know that in places such as Canada, vaccine passports drove compliance and effectively served as a mandate by driving up vaccine rates by as much as 17.5%. So what exactly has been going on? And why is it left to countries like Finland to fly the flag for freedom, while nations like the United States and the United Kingdom are oddly compliant to globalist corporatist entities? What exactly is going on there?
Now, on Friday the 12th of April, Asim gave a deposition, I suppose you would call it, to Helsinki District Court just last Friday, where he was essentially an expert witness. Now, it's interesting and disappointing that aspects of reality are drifting in from places like Finland. We looked at data over the past few days from Japan. Pity more data isn't coming from, United States, Canada, the United Kingdom, Western Europe, Australia, New Zealand. Information is coming in from diverse other countries.
Now, in Japan, there are protests against the WHO treaty. And in Finland, there is, as Dr. John Campbell there alluded to, a civil case to investigate certain measures that were undertaken. So let's dive in detail into this story and see how we're still being affected by regulations and lies perpetuated in the pandemic period. The World Health Organization's Dr. Hanna Nojnek testified in court that she advised her government that vaccine passports were not needed, but was ignored, despite explaining that the COVID vaccines did not stop virus transmission and the passports gave a false sense of security. The stunning revelations came to light in a Helsinki courtroom where Finnish citizen Mika Valkala is suing after he was denied entry to a cafe for not having a vaccine passport.
That guy really needed his coffee.
You deny me my coffee! I take you to court!
Dr. Nojnek is chief physician at the Finnish Institute for Health and Welfare and serves as the WHO's chair of strategic group of experts on immunization.
Stay away from parking lots, Dr. Hanna, is what I would say.
Testifying yesterday, she stated that the Finnish Institute for Health knew by the summer of 2021 that the COVID-19 vaccines did not stop virus transmission. During that same 2021 time period, the WHO said it was working to create an international trusted framework for safe travel while EU member states began rolling out COVID passports. The EU Digital COVID Certificate Regulation passed in July 2021, and more than 2.3 billion certificates were later issued. Visitors to France were banned if they did not have valid vaccine passports, which citizens had to carry to buy food at stores or to use public transport, all of which, it now seems, was a colossal waste of time and money and propaganda. So why do it? Who benefited? Is this just some kind of innocent error, an innocent mistake perpetuated at scale to the tune of 2.3 billion? Peculiar pieces of documentation issued, and think for a moment of all the personal inconveniences that were accrued by you. Either you took the vaccine and potentially there were consequences to that under the belief that you were helping or protecting other people, or you didn't take the vaccine and were therefore restricted access to various facilities or shamed or emotionally damaged in a variety of ways. Why did this happen? And why are we being invited to put it behind us with such extraordinary haste? But Dr. Nojnek testified yesterday that her institute advised the Finnish government in late 2021 that COVID passports no longer made sense, yet certificates continued to be required. Finnish journalist Ike Novikov reported the news yesterday after leaving the Helsinki courtroom where Dr. Nojnek spoke. Wait, so a WHO advisor, a
senior advisor, a medical expert, was completely ignored. What did they mean then when they said they were following the science? What does Dr. Fauci mean when he says, I am science? What does it mean when we are told that these are scientific interventions, not regulatory measures undertaken in an ad hoc manner, when we now know that the 6 feet social distancing measure just sort of emerged, that vaccines didn't prevent transmission and they continue to recommend and issue passports even when they knew that? What is beginning to become clear? Let me know in the chat. Tell me, what's emerging from the fog of this deceptive period? Dr. Neuneck's admission that the government ignored scientific advice to terminate vaccine passports proved shocking, as she is widely embraced in global medical circles. Besides chairing the WHO's Strategic Advisory Group on Immunizations, Dr. Neuneck is one of Finland's top vaccine advisors and serves on boards of Vaccines Together and the International Vaccine Institute. So she's hardly an anti-vaxxer, is she? So if the chief vaccine strategist of the WHO is being ignored, where does the power that the WHO implements come from? Where does the science upon which they're acting come from? How is it formulated? Via what trials? Via what information? And does it become increasingly relevant that the WHO is funded in a peculiar and unique way? And you can let me know in the chat right now who is a significant funder. And if it's not based on empiricism, as was claimed, what is it based on? Interrogate this yourself. Follow the science. The EU's digital COVID-19 certification helped establish the WHO Global Digital Health Certification Network in July 2023. By using European best practices, we contribute to digital health standards and interoperability globally to the benefit of those most in need, stated one EU official. Finnish citizen Mika Valkala created a website discussing his case against Finland's government, where he writes that he launched his lawsuit to defend basic rights after he was denied breakfast in December 2021 at a Helsinki cafe because he did not have a COVID passport even though he was healthy. The Constitution of Finland guarantees that any citizen should not be discriminated against based on health conditions, among other things, Valkala states on his website. We can't continue to bring you this beautiful content without the support of our partners. The Wellness Company are some of my favorite partners. Will your doctor even prescribe you ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine? Hey, I did it. The Wellness Company's Prescription Contagion Emergency Kit is unique, providing carefully selected effective medications for COVID-19 and respiratory illnesses. Ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, which some people call HCQ, don't know why, Z-Pak, and butanide, along with a nebulizer and guidebook for safe use. Do not muck around with a nebulizer. This is, of course, backed by research and endorsed by experts, specifically Dr. Peter McCulloch and Dr. Harvey Rich, both friends of the show. Avoid the chaos, wait times, and price of the hospital. Get the entire kit for the cost of a single doctor's visit. This is only available in the USA. Every American home should have one of these, don't you think? Visit twc.health/brand and use our code BRAND to save $30 plus get free shipping on your contagion kit. Okay, back to the content. Valkala's lawsuit continued today in Helsinki District Court, where British cardiologist Dr. Asim Malhotra, shout out Dr. Asim, remember to watch our episode, up now, fantastic conversation, will testify that during the COVID pandemic, some authorities and medical professionals supported unethical, coercive, and misinformed policies such as vaccine mandates and vaccine passports, which undermined informed patient consent and evidence-based medical practice, the opposite of science and the opposite of freedom. So what on earth is going on? So if vaccine passports weren't for safety and protection, what other motivation could there be? Remember, there was a moment where access to, for example, nightclubs and concerts was restricted on the basis of proof of vaccination, and many people thought that was because young people were not getting vaccinated in significant enough numbers. Let's have a look. COVID-19 proof of vaccination requirements, commonly known as vaccine passports, led to more Canadians under 50 getting their first dose shortly after the policies were implemented, according to a 2023 study by public health researchers. Nationally, researchers estimate first dose vaccination rates jumped 17.5% in the 7 weeks after provinces announced proof of vaccination policies, the study says. So now we have scientific data, but you also have your memory. Why did you take a vaccine if you took a vaccine? Was it because you felt like, oh no, I'm really worried that I might catch COVID or that I might give COVID to a frail or vulnerable relative? And if it were the second of those two reasons, that was stupid. Not that you're stupid. That's what we were kind of led to believe. Or was it because you simply wanted to go out and live life to the full, or travel, or go to work, or the many other motivations that were, it seems now, increasingly not valid and yet heavily pushed? What does this tell you? What should we remember before granting the WHO the ability to impose regulations just like they did before again. Additionally to that, of course, it was an incredibly profitable period for some of the most powerful corporatist entities on Earth. While jacking up drug prices, Pfizer recently reported more than $27 billion in revenue from its U.S. sales in 2023, but the big pharma titan owes nothing in federal income taxes despite being one of the most profitable pharmaceutical companies in the world. How can that be the case? How can you be so profitable and not owe any taxes? You make money, right? You pay taxes, right? You know where your taxes go. You know that they're part of a peculiar circuit of investment that frequently doesn't include you. So what's so special about Pfizer? How did Pfizer get themselves in this extraordinary position? Some of you had to take a vaccine in order to go to work to pay your taxes, taxes that Pfizer don't... What is this circle I'm drawing? It's a circle that we are being penetrated in. Pfizer's tax dodge illustrates how those corporations, in particular pharmaceutical and tech giants, are able to enjoy astonishingly low tax rates by using a system of lucrative tax loopholes. While legislation to halt such tax schemes has stalled in Congress, corporate giants often stash intellectual property rights for their drugs and other products in offshore tax havens and force their US-based operations to buy the rights to manufacture and sell those drugs and products here in the United States. It seems they live in a different world than the rest of us. While we may occupy the same geographical space, we clearly don't occupy the same ideological or economic space. One thing is for certain, we shouldn't be granting further authority to these unelected, potentially corrupt institutions and organizations that don't even listen to their own advice if their own advice goes against what appears increasingly to be an agenda. I'm referring, of course, to the case in Helsinki, where their own vaccine experts said, well, there's no point in vaccine passports. It's going to make people have a false sense of security if your agenda is protecting people, because, of course, the vaccines don't prevent against transmission. Shouldn't we let everybody know that? We're just going to take a little phone call from a few people. No, we're not going to be telling anyone that for a little while yet. Observers say that the latest draft of the WHO treaty amendment seemed to have toned things down a little, but continues to provide for WHO's expanded powers along the said lines. So, look, the good news is it has an impact when we make a lot of noise, when we oppose, when we unite, when we say, hey, this WHO treaty looks like you might use it to impose lockdowns and certain medical measures on the basis of everything from climate change to a cough. We're against it. They've gone back and amended it, but have they amended it enough? Initially, the amendments were worded such to allow the WHO to strengthen its own abilities when it comes to combating misinformation and disinformation. That means information that they don't like, true information that might arm you with the facts and make you a little more recalcitrant and a little more empowered. Whereas now the text says that the WHO will coordinate and support locally on matters like risk communications, including misinformation, etc. So they still have the power, they've just diluted the language a little bit. What you'd probably want the treaty to say is the WHO's closed now because they really ballsed up that last pandemic, ignoring their own advice, potentially exacerbating certain conditions, ignoring the economic impact on some of the world's most vulnerable people, collapsing our economies generally speaking, creating a mass outbreak of psychosis, not correctly measuring the impact of some of the products they heavily endorse on other medical conditions, not to mention the impact of lockdown measures on medical conditions such as heart disease and cancer. They've clearly not made Pfizer and Moderna accountable for some of the impact of even their clinical trials, let alone the adverse injuries potentially caused by their products. Here's your treaty. Do you want to sign that?
Well, let's ask Klaus. He's in a comparable organization. Bill, Klaus, I think we were in trouble.
The other important point is vaccine passports and which entity has the ultimate say in issuing and requiring them. On this, the WHO still wants the ability to require these, as well as recommend to nation states to carry out a number of proof reviewing exercises. These concern not only vaccine passports, proof of vaccination or other prophylaxis, but also proof of medical examinations and lab analysis and proof of measures taken on departure or in transit to eliminate infection or contamination. That sounds a lot like vaccine passports by another longer name. Under the amendment, anyone who refuses to be examined or vaccinated can be denied entry into a country. Another point of interest, by some as a way to let private companies participate in both the war on misinformation and vaccine passport efforts, is the provision that says non-state actors must comply with health measures taken under these IHR. This is probably granting powers of censorship to the type of groups that Moderna, Pfizer and government departments deploy to shut down online pundits who potentially speak out against some of their measures, allowing them to track, de-amplify, censor, shut down, demonize and even destroy significant voices in our community. Let me know in the chat if you think they would ever do anything like that. And the WHO can still declare an early action alert and a pandemic emergency, which sounds like they have the ability to bypass and overrule your national democracy if you're lucky enough to live in one, even though increasingly it seems like those words are redundant and irrelevant as words and language, ideas such as science and empiricism and morality and ethics and openness and transparency all fall away, as what becomes apparent is that during the pandemic period, an agenda was being enacted, and it seems less and less likely that that agenda was to help and protect people and ensure safe passage through a naturally occurring biochemical event. That seems almost like a ridiculous dream. Indeed, what is the conspiracy theory now? That a virus emerged from nature and the pharmaceutical industry helped to save us, or an event emerged from the pharmaceutical industry and the pharmaceutical industry benefited from it and various institutions used it as an opportunity to implement incredible measures that may yet not even have reached their peak? But that's just what I think. Why don't you let me know what you think in the comments and chat? Remember, support our movement for 1 month only. You can use the code ISURRENDER to get a month to review and enjoy our content. You can cancel at any time. That's how confident we are in our content. Join us. Become a part of this movement. But more important than any of that, if you can, please stay free. Hey, thanks for watching. If you want to see more uncensored content where free speech can flourish, join our live stream. Click the link right here to watch the next video.
Hey guys, welcome to the Liberal Hive Mind, a channel solely focused on exposing the abundant hypocrisy of the left. Well, after all their anti-democratic efforts, you know, the same people who are constantly going on and on about democracy, my democracy this and my democracy that, after all their pathetic little attempts to rid the ballot of RFK Jr.'s name in some of the most important states, I mean, just think about it, Democrats took legal action to attempt to stop or bar a legitimate presidential candidate from the ballot in multiple states, starting with Nevada, of course, which we previously covered. Wow, amazing democratic ideals, right? Well, after all their pathetic little anti-democratic attempts, it's culminated in more failure. The end result is they have not succeeded in their task. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. made the ballot in Nevada, as well as many other states. And of course, the next state on the list that we kept talking about, or that we put so much emphasis on, was Michigan. The Rust Belt is the number one focus right now, namely Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. How those states vote is going to steer the direction of the country. It's going to decide who gets to be the next president, whether that's Joe Biden or Donald J. Trump. And while I love to be the bearer of bad news for Democrats, so here it is. RFK Jr. just made the ballot in Michigan. Yep, that's music to my ears. You can hear the echoes of leftist screeches in the background. National polls don't matter anymore. It's now officially a three-way race. No more hypothetical, regardless of how much of a hissy fit the Kennedy family throws, RFK Jr. is officially in this thing. It's legitimate. And so let's take a look at how that impacts things, shall we? We got some stuff to get into, so let's roll the tape. All right, folks. So let's first start off with the news. This is the most important little bit of news in terms of election analysis that's dropped to date.
Presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has officially qualified for the ballot here in Michigan. The Secretary of State says he'll run on the natural law party ticket in the state. Meanwhile, in Philadelphia, his family showed up to boost one of his rivals. A dozen members of the Kennedy dynasty took the stage to endorse President Biden for another term. They believe his independent presidential campaign threatens to split the Democratic vote and tip the balance towards Donald Trump. This is the latest in the battle between RFK Jr. and his family over the Kennedy family legacy. His sister Carrie says American rights and freedoms are in jeopardy, and unity is the only thing that can save them. Likely be a close race in November. President Biden won the state in 2020, but President Trump won in 2016, both decided by less than 1% of the vote. The last poll shows Kennedy with 12% support in the state.
You know, previously we celebrated some other states that RFK Jr. made the ballot, but most of those states aren't really contentious. At least according to the polling data. I mean, you never know what's going to happen on Election Day. You never know what surprises we're going to be hit with, not only on Election Day, but in terms of October surprises and whatnot. But as for now, Nevada, Arizona, Georgia, they seem pretty safely in the R column, pretty safely in the Trump column. The three states that are most competitive and most hard to predict at this point, the closest races that we're seeing, are in the Rust Belt battlegrounds. Well, again, we've been covering these trends. RFK Jr. entering the race changes the dynamic substantially. And of course, we've been analyzing the effects of RFK Jr. entering this race, splitting the vote, and the effect at this point is unanimous. Third-party candidates provide Donald Trump a massive edge in some of the most important crucial swing states. And now that we got our eyes on Michigan, well, the effect remains obvious. In a five-way race, including independent candidates, Donald Trump leads in every single poll. Take a look here, anywhere from a +2 to a +5 lead, which has remained steady for the past few months. I think Democrats once again shot themselves in the foot, a serious political miscalculation here. You know, they've been going on and on and on about democracy, but when you make yourself look like a huge hypocrite, the blue anon, vote blue no matter who people won't question any of it, but the honest people, those who are more on the fence, people who you wouldn't describe as Biden loyals or DNC loyals, well, they notice the clear hypocrisy, the utter dishonesty. You can't talk about democracy and then engage in the most undemocratic actions in recent memory. We gotta save American democracy from the evil Orangeman. That's all we ever hear, but the only people who seem to be an enemy to democracy are those warning about the imminent threat that democracy faces. And I'm not the only one who notices this. In fact, it's kind of part of RFK Jr.'s messaging campaign. We covered this clip the other day.
I can make the argument that President Biden is a much worse threat to democracy. And the reason for that is President Biden is the first candidate in history, the first president in history that has used the federal agencies to censor political speech, so to censor his opponent.
And who do you think that message is for? You think that's for Republicans? No. Donald Trump's support remains stagnant. Nobody's defecting from the Trump camp to go vote for RFK Jr., and if there are some of those people, they're an extreme, extreme, insignificant minority. But on the left-wing side, a lot of people seem to be kind of getting the message, seeing what's going on, and it bothers them. For Pete's sakes, even socialist Cenk Uygur, far-left progressive Cenk Uygur, is now officially going on the record stating that he's openly considering voting for RFK Jr. because of the issue of, you guessed it, democracy, or at least the hypocrisy on the issue.
The headlines are wrong. He didn't say that Biden is definitely a bigger threat. He said he could make an argument for that. And you've got to be careful with that. And you know what the mainstream media loves to do. They love to smear anyone who's an outsider. So boom, they took that as an opportunity to do that. So he's right about that. Number two, he's right to be concerned about Biden being a threat to democracy himself. Maybe not for the reasons that he's stating, but Biden did support anti-democratic movements within the primary. The Democratic Party canceled the election in Florida. They try to keep out every candidate in North Carolina, Tennessee, et cetera. So they love to rig elections. Yes, I use the word rigged, okay? So you can go cry about it if you're mainstream media. How about you do your job and talk about how they canceled the election in Florida in the primary and just declared Biden the winner? So if you're going to make the argument that you're a champion of democracy, you should probably try it in your own primaries. For the first time today, I'm now considering RFK Jr.
Those are the people who are noticing it, because those are the people who are affected. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is a Democrat. The Kennedy family has a long history, a family legacy under the Democrat Party banner. Well, obviously, let's call them Kennedy Democrats, or Democrats in general. Well, those are the people who are being disenfranchised by all of the undemocratic actions we've seen from the Democrat Party. They've simply declared Joe Biden the victor. They're skipping democracy in favor of installing their preferred puppet president. And that is a uniquely Democrat issue. That doesn't affect Trump supporters. Trump supporters, like I said earlier, remain steadfast in their support and in their beliefs. And this is obviously seen within the polling data, as CNN pointed out.
This is viewed favorably across Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. In the 2020 exit polls, what do we see? 50% of voters view Joe Biden on average favorably in those states, compared to just 45% for Donald Trump. Look at the Joe Biden trend line where he is now. Joe Biden is far less like than he was 4 years ago. Just 43% of voters now view Joe Biden favorably in these states. And Donald Trump, despite everything that has happened, is actually slightly more liked. 47% favorable rating. So this isn't just a lesser of two evils that's going on. The fact is that Donald Trump is, in fact, better liked than he was 4 years ago and is better liked than Joe Biden is right now in these battleground states. It's pretty gosh darn clear.
Trump's support continues to rise. He maintains his base. He maintains his floor. The only way for Donald Trump is up. Meanwhile, Joe Biden continues to shed voters. He's getting millennial voters due to the popular left-wing college stance on foreign policy in the Middle East relating to Israel and Gaza. He's shedding young voters because of all his empty promises, as we constantly cover. He's shedding minority voters because he told them, if you don't vote for me, then you ain't black. Well, they listened, and then they got absolutely nothing for their vote, and now he's shedding Kennedy-supporting Democrats due to the undemocratic actions that they have taken, the extreme actions that they've taken to maintain their grasp on power. Those are the facts. That's what the data tells us, and now that RFK Jr. is officially on the ballot in Michigan, I guess we'll have to see where the polls go. Now when pollsters ask voters in Michigan, who do you plan on voting for? Well, answering RFK Jr. is no longer a hypothetical if he is going to be in the election. It's now real. The head-to-head national polls in Michigan are completely irrelevant. We'll have to see where it goes, and of course we'll have to see what happens in Pennsylvania as well. The Kennedy family, as we know, has a long history in Pennsylvania. Let's see if the Kennedy family's rejection of their own family member has the effects that the Biden campaign is hoping for, or maybe, I don't know, just maybe it might have the opposite effect. I don't know. I guess we'll have to see. All I know is that things are getting quite interesting, and I'll tell you this, after this latest development, Democrat strategists and activists, well, they're probably soiling their diapers. I guess just as their favorite president is on a daily basis.
What must be what?
All right, well, that's what I got for you guys. That's the latest RFK Jr. update. Hopefully you enjoyed the video. If you did, make sure to leave a like and possibly subscribe. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you on the next one.